from the department, let me first say that I've received the apology from the Minister of Defense, who is not well, and therefore is unable to attend the meeting today. However, the Deputy Minister of Defense and Military Veterans is in attendance. Good morning, DM. I was told that the Deputy Minister would be in attendance. Okay, it doesn't look like he has joined the meeting. I'll skip him and then go to the representatives of the department. Ambassador Kuchu, the Secretary for Defense, is in the meeting, accompanied by Lieutenant General Limbuli, Chief Lock, Ms. F. Mabilani, Acting Chief Audit Executive, Brigadier General Mtsweni is from the Log Division, Mr. Adam Obonsi from the Office of the Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Luyanda Mangugu, Chartered Accountant, is the Chair of the Audit Committee. I'm not too sure if he has other Audit Committee members present in the meeting, but he will indicate that when it is time to speak, to present the report of the Audit Committee. That time will come. So that's the delegation from the department. I welcome them to the meeting. Brian, are there any apologies besides the apology of the minister that I've just recorded?
That is correct, Chair. We have an apology from Ngosi Cebekhulu. Ngosi Cebekhulu is attending the Portfolio Committee on Public Service, which is also sitting at the same time. We also have an apology from Ms. Motapo, who is unavailable due to ill health. That is all, Chair.
All right. So those are the apologies today. We note those apologies. Are there any objection to us accepting those apologies, colleagues?
No objection, Chair.
No objection. Good morning, Tabo.
Good morning, Chair.
Thanks so much, Chief. DM, good morning.
Honorable Chair, good morning, and honorable members of the committee, good morning.
Yeah, welcome, Chief. Thanks. All right. Those are the two issues we are dealing with today. Right, so I will take the first one, that's a briefing on the operation Tusana. I will ask the SecDef, but before I ask the SecDef, I will ask the Deputy Minister to just give us his input on, I will ask him to just cover both items. And then hand over to the SecDef and other members of the department to take us through the presentation. Over to you, DM.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, once again, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to host the department today on the discussions of the conclusion to the challenges around Project Tusano. The committee has been provided with a full record of this project from when we commenced with it, and where this project is at now in terms of the activities that are still continuing under Project Tucson. Most importantly, what the department is here to present are the responses to the AG's findings on Project Tucson. The item that we will also deal with after we have dealt with the AG's findings and the responses to the findings of the AG's office on Project Tucson, which findings were available the last time we discussed the matter, but we did not focus on them. Once we are done with that, the sector will proceed to introduce the audit committee of the department, and the audit committee of the department will present the report that has been forwarded to the oversight committee. Chair, may I reserve at this point my comments or inputs around the presentation that are going to be shared, and I will possibly come in after honorable members have made their own observations with respect to the matters. Chair, with that said, may I hand back to you to proceed with the business of the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DM. You are right that the issues that we are discussing today we have received a presentation on them before. But today we are approaching them from a different angle. On the Operation Tucson 1, it was a presentation from the AG. It was on the 16th of March this year. And today we are receiving the side of the department, both presenting on the project as well as responding to the AG's findings. Early in March, I think it was on the 2nd of March this year, we received a report on the audit action plan from the department, and today we are receiving a report on the same issue, but this time from the audit committee, which is independent and is entrusted with the responsibility of monitoring the performance of the department on areas that pertain to audit. So I think we'll have those presentations today. Thank you very much, DM. I should mention that in the meeting, there is present Mr. Lawrence, Lawrence van Vieren, and Ms. Mbali Tsotetsi from the AG's office. I also welcome them as well. All right, colleagues, I'm not going to say what the AG said. You were in the meeting when the AG made the presentation. So over to you, SECDEF. Thank you very much, DM. SecDef, the platform is yours.
Chair, good morning, and good morning to the honourable members and the Deputy Minister. Chair, I think as it has been correctly stated, those are the presentations we're going to make. We will start with the Chusano project, which is a project that will be presented by Chief Logistics General Mbuli and the team, and then and also respond to some of the issues that have been raised by the Auditor General. And in essence, basically, Chairperson also stating whether through Operation Chusano, what value did we derive out of the entire project. The second presentation, the Chairperson will come in two parts. The first one will be delivered by Ms. Marilane, who is our acting internal auditor, and then on the audits that they have conducted as the internal audit. And then the second part of it will be a presentation that will be made by Mr. Luyanda Mangungu. Luyanda Mangungu is the chair of our audit committee. Chairperson, let me just state that we used to have 6 members of the audit committee. Unfortunately, in March, one of them passed away, and then 2 of them, their term came to an end. So we have advertised the post to fill those vacancies that have been created through the passing away of the one member and the other 2 whose term has come to an end. And of course, as you say, these are the people that we are a committee we are required to have in terms of the Treasury regulations, chief amongst other things to assist us as the department in dealing with the areas that are pressure points for us and how best we can resolve them. So those are the presentations. And maybe Chairperson will stand to be guided by yourself. And then on Chusano, we have a longer version. So I'm not so sure whether, given the time, you prefer that we do the longer presentation or the shorter version. But I would leave it up to you, Chairperson, for guidance. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll present the documents that was circulated to all members. The abridged version was circulated this morning. I'm not too sure if members have had time to even go through it. So let's deal with the unabridged version. But obviously, I will guide them as to what we think it's given that we don't have all the time, what I think should be skipped from the presentation. Up front, I would say all the pictures where you indicate there are pictures that are towards the end of the presentation that we can skip. Over to you, General, who's taking us through.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Lieutenant General Mbuli, Chief Logistics. Honorable members of the committee.
Can I give you 30 minutes, General?
Yes, thank you.
Is that about fine?
Thank you. Yes, it will be fine. This is
fine.
Honorable members of the committee.
Kindly set your video on, please, for all those who will be contributing. I request that you set your video on. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable member, we are in full team here from LOC division. We have even brought in Major General Charlie, who has the full background on the on project listing to Chusano. As the Deputy Minister and SecDef have outlined the background, we will two reports, what has already been loaded, Honorable Chair, is the shortened version of the editing of the presentation, which directly answers the questions on how much money was spent on editing on Tusano, what were the skills transferred to our members. Where are the skills being transferred in various regions? That's then we'll then answer the last questions on the audit findings about the procurement process. If we're followed or not, this thing followed, that will be the answers that we then give. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll ask then General Mtweni to give the presentation.
Chair, I'm not too sure if you heard on whether you present the unabridged or the shortened version or the longer version of the presentation. I think we're presenting the unabridged one, the longer version, because the shortened one was only circulated this morning. So members had sight of the one you circulated some few days back. So can we deal with that?
Can you then give me time to load the longer version?
Yes, you can see how much it cost us in terms of time to receive documents very late.
Okay.
So we don't take kindly to that.
May I suggest that maybe the secretariat load the longer version because they have the longer version? If it's
thank
possible.
You. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Is it visible?
It's not visible.
Is it now visible?
It's loading. Still loading. Right. Okay. So over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll give General Mtweni to give the presentation. Thank you, General.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members of the Kwatula Committee. I'm General Mtweni. I'm going to present the report on Tusano. The aim of the presentation is to provide this report to the portfolio committee. This is the scope that I'm going to present: the background, the contract, the Swiss transfer, distribution of members, and the capability building, and then expenditure comparison between industries and projects. Suzano, projected expenditure for the remainder of the contract, the deployment of Cuban specialists, the contractual options in the RSA, and then the achievements. Then I'll conclude. The way of background, since in the 2000, the South African National Defense Force, just like any other state department, started experiencing huge budget cuts, which was shown regarding gross domestic products and current economic climate. This affected the standard ability to ensure that the prime mission equipment is maintained optimally. As a result, this has an adverse impact on the force readiness of the SNDF. Furthermore, most of the SNDF skilled members were poached by the private sector, who enticed them with lucrative packages. The exodus of scarce case and budget cuts led to the decline in the serviceability of our prime mission equipment. And this actually forced the department to rely on the industry for maintenance and repairs of our prime mission equipment. However, the industry took advantage of the situation and charged exorbitant prices. Now, our leadership had to devise some new initiatives intended of arresting the decline of serviceability of our prime mission equipment and resuscitation of the current aging standard of our vehicles and equipment. The project Susan was then established in terms of the memorandum of understanding between the government of South Africa and the government of Cuba on the 10th of January 2012. The bilateral that took place between Cuba and South Africa is based on the developmental needs and sharing of expertise. This was motivated by the fact that Cuba has a unique maintenance preservation system of all prime mission equipment dating back to 1954. Furthermore, this was aimed at reducing expenditure of repairing prime mission equipment at private industries that were dealing with SNDF exorbitant prices during the prevailing national budget cuts. The SNDF opted to procure spares and repair of its own prime mission equipment with the assistance of the Cuban specialists and their standard counterparts. Today, this relationship has ensured that the SNDF covers widespread strides and that old and obsolete prime mission equipment restored to their prime. Now, in terms of the contracts, we have two contracts which were signed. The first contract is contract C1-17001 that provides professional and technical services. Now, in terms of the South African Air Force, we provide technical assistance in the organization of the maintenance system, the repair and maintenance of aviation equipment, technical assistance in the preservation of aviation armament. In the military health services, they provide repair and maintenance of services and medical equipment. Now, we also have a contract T1-17002, which is actually the vocational training to South African students The following courses are provided to our learners. In the South African Army, we have the level, mid-level transport and tank technicians, and then we have also mechanical engineering and on transport and tanks, and then we also have artisan training. At Air Force, we have the general military training for future pilots, the aviation technicians, aviation engineers, air traffic controllers. At the military health services, we have the medical training, and then we have the training on psychology. We also have the training on medical military medicine. And then we also have two courses for our senior officers. That is the Strategic Defense and Security Program. And then we also have the Joint Senior Command and Staff Program. Now, this is the skills transfer that we are actually doing. In the Army, we have the special course in security and national defense, and the number of learners up to date is actually 32. And then the postgraduate course in strategic operations, that is the Joint Senior Command and Staff Program. We also have the 32 members who have undergone this course. And then we have a mechanical engineer on transport and tanks, which we trained 45 members. Now, on this course, it's a 5-year study program for our engineers. And then up to date, we have managed to qualify 45 members. And then the middle level transport and tech technicians, this course is for 2 years, and up to date we have qualified 52 members. And then the artisan training is also a two-year course. Up to date, we have managed to train 54 of the Army. Now, in terms of the Air Force, we have a special course in security and national defense. As I said, for the Air Force, we have managed to produce 16 members, and for the postgraduate, it's also 16 members. For the aviation engineer course, this course is a 6-year course. We have managed to produce 15 members. And then the aviation technicians is a 3-year course, which is up to date, we have managed to produce 22 members. The air traffic controller, this course is for 2 years, and we have up to date managed to produce 29 members. And then for the pilots, we have managed to produce 25 members. And then we also have the aircraft preservation, which we also managed to produce 9 members. And then we have the simulator developer, that is, so far we've trained 5 members. And then we have also, within the simulator developer, we have what we call a software developer, which we also trained 4 members. For the South African Navy, for the SDSP course, we managed to train 15 members. And the postgraduate, the same number. And then for ourselves, for the SDSP, is also for 16 members, and for the postgraduate and the strategic operations, we managed to produce 16 members. For the medical training, we managed to produce 76 members, and for psychology is 16 members, biomedical is also 3 members, and then technical training is 4 members. Now, In terms of the transfer of skills now within the country with our Cuban counterparts in the army, we have managed to have the motor mechanics where skills transfer in terms of in-post training is done, and 197 has been produced. And then we have auto electricians, which we have 33. The final fitters and spray painters is 34. And then the refrigerator mechanic, 8. Trimmers and upholstery, 5. Welder, 14. The Amara, 6. The parachute rigger, 1. Third, tire repair, 2. And then the apprentice to become motor mechanics and auto electrician, welder and sprinter is 149. In terms of the Air Force, at the Air Force base, Woodspring, we have motor mechanics, which are 4. And then at Macardo, motor mechanics, 6. Air Force Base, Devon, motor mechanics, 4. And then at the Bloomsbury, 4. Esther Platt, 5. And the Overbeck, we have 3. At the 8th Medical Battalion, we have a skills transfer of 10. And then in the simulator project, we have the simulator project team that is at the School of Engineers, and we managed to have transfers of skills of 10. And then at the Army Technical Training School, we have 15. And then at the School of Armor, we have 10. At Defense Artillery School, 11. Intensive School, 9. And then the total of all the skills transfer in the Army, we have 719. This is actually all the members who have undergone skills transfer, whether inside and also in Cuba. And then for Air Force, we have 167. For the Navy, we have 32. And then SAMS, we have 141. The total is 1,059. The members who acquired skills through studies in Cuba received a certificate which was taken to SAQUA for accreditation. However, members that acquired skills through interaction with the Cuban specialist in the SANDF technical workshop do not get certificate, as it is not a formal training. It is treated as a skills acquired through in-post training. Now, in terms of the distribution of members who have acquired skills from Project Susano, we have in the Army, we start with the regional workshop. In Gauteng, we have 125. In the DOD Mobilization Center in Three States, we have 70. 102 field workshop in Northwest, we have 37. In 101 field workshop in Northern Cape, we have 54. The Army Support Base Kimberley, we have 14. At the 43 Brigade in Gauteng, we have 20. The Air Defense Artillery School in Mpumalanga, we have 17. The Army Support Base Western Cape, we have 21. And then we have the Infantry School Western Cape, we have 16. The 35 Engineer Support Regiment in Gauteng, we have 33. At Tristan, Northern Cape, we have 11. The Maintenance Ordnance Depot, Valmastal, Gauteng, was 31. The total is 449. When we go to the Air Force, at the Air Force Base Woodspring, we have the four members who have been skills transferred. And then we have in Macardo, we have 6. Devon, we have 4. Blue Spring, we have 4. Eastern Platt, we have 5. Overbeck, we have 3. The total is 26 for the Air Force. SAMS 8 Mets, we have 10 members who have undergone skills transfer. Now, in terms of all the provinces. The members who studied in Cuba, in the army, we have 215. In the Air Force, we have 141. In the South African Navy, we have 32. In the military health services, we have 131. The total of all the members is 151. And then in the Army, the School of Engineers, we have 10. In the South African Army Training School, we have 15. School of Armor, we have 10. The Air Defense Artillery School, we have 11. The Infantry School, we have 9. In terms of the vehicles which were repaired, we have the production centers which are on my left, which is the ADS school in Mpumalanga. The number of vehicles is 261, and the cost and labor which we have the labor which includes also the spares, we have spent 883,596. And then in Kimberley, we managed to do 555 vehicles at the cost of 5.5 million. And then at ASB Western Cape, we have 636 vehicles at the tune of 2.6. And then at MOP Center Free State, we have 1,139 vehicles at the tune of 34 million. And then at the three side, we have 174 at the tune of 2 million. And then at the 43 to Cage, we have 567 vehicles at the tune of 5.7 million. And then in infantry school, the vehicles are 232 at 599,693. And then at the Army issue, we have 2-3 vehicles with a tune of 596,000. And then at the 101 field workshop, we have 1,143. We have managed to do to spend 28.7 million. And then at 102 field workshop, 1,121 vehicles. We have spent 20.4 million. And then at the 35 engineering school, we managed to do 393 vehicles at 3 million. And then in the regional workshop, we have 913 vehicles at the tune of 60 million. And then at 110 regiment in Free State, we have 883,000 that were spent. And then the number of vehicles that have been done in the Army is 7,751 at the 1224,84514. When we go to the Air Force, at the Air Force Usprit, we did 9 vehicles at 20,000, and then Makado, 11 vehicles at 14,000, Devon, 5 vehicles at 7,000, at the Air Force Base, Bloemfontein, it's 8 vehicles at 7,000, and then Eastern Flat, Western Cape, 3 vehicles at 3,000, and then Overberg, 6 vehicles at 2,650, and then Watertrof, 2,385, and then Langebaan, Western Cape, 1 vehicle at 1,060. Now, in the Navy, Sandalstown Naval Base, we did the number of vehicles is 1,049. At 1.3 million. And then at the 8 Met, 700 vehicles were done at 14 million. And then we also have a special for school. We did 16 vehicles at 99,000. And then the fourth regiment at the Western Cape, the 17 vehicles at 346. And then the first special forces regiment, we did 73 vehicles at 434. And then the total number is 855 with the 16 million that we have spent. Now, in terms of the components that we have repaired at the ATA school in Mpumalanga, they did 70 components at the tune of the 32,000. In Kimberley, they did 244 at the tune of 73,000. And then Western Cape, we did 400 components with the tune of 17,000. The mob sentence in Free State, 1,131 at 715,000. And then Free State, we had 80, and then at the tune of 103. For 3 brigades, we didn't do anything there. And then at the Army issue, we did 53 at the tune of 24,000. 101 is 1,016 at 928,000. 102, 980 components at 65,000. And then at the engineering school of, we have 151 components at 56,000. And then the regional workshop, we have 2,166 at 1 million. 1.9 million. And then at the one tank regiment per state, 35 components were done at the cost of 32,000. The number of components which were done so far in the army is 6,356. Now at the Navy, the components which were done is 24 at the tune of 2,120. In the 8 MAT, they did nothing there. And the Special Forces, we had 21 components that were repaired, and then with the tune of 6,625. And then Langeban is 11 at 6,886. And the five special forces is 49 at 100,000. And then the number of components in total is 105 with a cost of 115,000. The vehicles in preservation in the army were in Palmerston, the quantity is 464. In Mob Center, we have 449, and then we have a pilot project in Free State, the quantity is 57, and then at 8 MAT we have 53 vehicles. The labor cost for all this was 8.6 million, and then the spares which were acquired there was 881,000, and then the total is 9.5 million. And then the preservation, the number of vehicles which were done is 1,023, and with the breakdown which has already spelled out. We also have a simulator project which is currently underway. We have 24 720 of driving and maintenance simulators under the contract T117001 on supplement service. And then we have 10 thermal simulators which are completed and installed in these different locations. In the Geneva school, we have one. Installed 6 driving and maintenance instructors, 2 TSC members which also transfer skills and then signalers have been introduced and orientated on the system. At the arm meeting training center, we have one which we installed, and then we have 10 instructors on driving and maintenance, which we the skills were transferred. And then we have also 5 TSC members which have been introduced and orientated on the system. At the School of Armor, we have 4 Summer 20 simulators which were installed with the driving and maintenance instructors which were introduced there, 10 were and also orientated on the system. The ADA artillery school, we have 2 summer 20 simulators installed, 6 instructors were introduced there, 4 members of the technical services corps, and 1 have been introduced and orientated on the system. At the infantry school, we have 2 simulator driving maintenance which was installed, 7 driving and maintenance instructors were introduced, and also 2 signalers have been introduced on the system. Now, in terms of the capability building, training and skills transfer of the aforementioned members of the South African National Defence Force is done on the purpose of creating own capability within the SNDF. This capability will enhance the formation of the DOT Fort Line Repair Workshop, which will be situated at the tank base, that is at Lincolnton, and also the 9 regional workshops in the provinces. These workshops will be self-reliant in terms of expertise, skills and knowledge. Furthermore, this will serve as a good platform to apply skills acquired for training in Cuba. We envisage that the structure of the fault line repair will be as follows. We have the component repair, the bodyworks, which is panel beating and split painting, dismantling, refrigeration, engineer, engine overall, armament fitters, upholstery, and then gearbox repair, welding, and motor electrical. Now, the staff components will consist of the following: motor mechanics, which is the artisan, military artisan, senior military artisan, artificer. Then we also have the auto electricians, which is the same. Then the Amara, refrigerators, panel beaters, and the recovery. In the regional workshop, the regional workshop in different 9 provinces will entail the following: maintenance and repair section, the industrial repair, refrigeration, armament fitters, second line recovery. Now the staff component is as follows: the motor mechanics, auto electricians, Amara, refrigerators, recovery. Now, when we come to the expenditure, we have what we call the servicing of the contract. In terms of the contract, T117001, which was signed, we have actually spent 594,234,500. And then we, on contract T117, which deals with the vocational training, we have spent 379,892. And then the total is 966,071,392,929. In terms of the support to the Cuban specialists who are here, this is the breakdown of the expenditure. We We also give them phone and internet, and so far we've spent 1.4, and then the flight tickets, we have spent almost 49 million, and then the laundry services is 894,795. Catering services is 743, 218. The accommodation is 41 million, and then other expenditures is 195,405,800. And then the total is 289,272,342. On the chartered aircraft that we have spent so far, we have spent almost 120,021,439. In terms of clothing, special purposes, that is dresses for students and PPEs, which we have given to our students, and also for our Cuban specialists, we have spent 1.2 million, and then for their toiletries, 520,202. And then the grant total is 1,747,710. Now, the total in all this, the expenditure, the servicing, as I mentioned, we have spent 966,071,329. Support to the Cubans is 289,272,342. Charity crowd is 120 million. Welfare sustenance is 1.7 million. And then the total of all what we have spent for the duration of the project is 1.37. Now, in terms of the comparison, for the expenditure over the systems that we have done, when we started this project, we started the project 2015. But before that, we actually calculated from 2009 when we were actually engaged with the industry, and the figures is as displayed on the screen. In 2009, we have spent 362,762,299. In 2010, it was 379,810,133. In 2011, 364,476,646. 2012, it was 423,999,302. And then 2013, it was 632,124,568. And then the last year, it was 509,096,765. And then when we calculated the whole amount, it was actually 2.6 billion. And when we started the project to Sino, the number we started with 6 million in 2015, and then it went to 143 million in 2016. In 2017, it was 170 million. 2018, it was 274 million. 2019, 219 million, and then in 2020 it was 323 million, and then in 2021 it was 239. And up to date, now from 2021 financially, we have spent 1.37 million. Now the savings that we have seen up to date is 1.2 million as compared to the dealer. 1.2 billion as compared to the industry. Now the projected expenditure for the contract is going to end in 2025, but the Cubans will be going in December in 2024. So then we have calculated for 2021, it was 277 million. And then this year, we project it will be 305 million. And then the following year, it will be 335 million. And then the last year, it will be 252 million. And then the total will be 1288455668 Now, in terms of the deployment of human specialists, professionals, we have at the regional work in Kaltim, we have 5. At the DOT maintenance ordinance depot, we have 11. Medical depot, we have 6. DOT MOF center, we have 24. At 101, we have 6. At 102, we have 6. In Kimberley, we have 4. At the Western Cape, we have 5. At the ADS school, we have 5. In the Air Force, we have 8. At the Eastern Plant, Langepart, we also have 5. At Bloomsbury, we also have 5. At South Corp, we have 9. At Simonstown, we have 9. The simulator project team, we have 12 members there. And then the head of delegation, we have 5 members of the Cuban specialist. And then we have also advanced we have five advisors, and the total number is 140. In terms of the options available in RSA, Project Tucson has empowered the standard artisans with enough skills to carry out all technical tasks on the undercarriage of the vehicles. However, specialized tasks such as repair of superstructure require special tools and workshop equipment which are not available in the...
1 minute to go, General.
It should be noted that this contract is costly and cost and skills are not imparted to attend their participants. The current budget cuts make it quite difficult to afford repairing vehicles using private companies. More funding should be allocated on procurement of workshop equipment, toolboxes, especially and special tools. Now, I suggest that we then this is the repair train that was actually recently done. Now, these are the achievements that we have done.
Please skip those and go direct straight to page, to slide number 70. Continue.
Project Susano continue its development following the elements that written the contract signed between the two parties.
Wait, where are you? So are you on slide 70? Where are you?
Slide 70, sir.
Okay, just move to slide 70 so that we're all, we've just skipped the graphic presentation of achievements, because he has already presented on them in his report. We're now on page 70. Before this page, there's a page before this. Oh, okay, it's fine. No, go to page 70, I'm sorry. There's a different report. Page 70.
Page 70 is this one.
Go on, no, continue. Next page.
Your Honor, the presentation that actually does justice in terms of the
Sorry, you have page 70 before the conclusion. There's a page that says RFI from AG South Africa. I'll read it. Logistics Division has responded to all requests for information from the Auditor General of South Africa. This is confirmed in the correspondence from Mr. Dima Leroux from Idem Abonsi, dated 1st June 2002. Outstanding information from arms of service is being attended to and will be forwarded to AG South Africa as soon as possible. You have skipped that one. Can you talk to that one as well?
I'm sorry, Chair. I'm trying to get that one. Remember, we tried to load the bigger version. So,
okay, just finalize the thing because it's. I think you are now at the end of your presentation. That only talks to just one slide that you've skipped. It's also critical for purposes of us understanding where are you with the AG in respect of the request for information.
Okay. Is it this one? Can I read the responses to answer, Wendy?
Yes, please. You can read them because you can't beam them. Okay, you are welcome to do so.
Okay.
I'm sure the team will be trying to fly them as you are reading them.
Yeah, Chairperson, there is a presentation that was, I think, sent to by Brian as well, which on page slide 23, it says responses to ACFA finding.
Yes, so, I mean, those are the slides we're looking for, Marie.
Yeah, exactly. I can't think why C. Locke do not have that presentation prepared by them.
No, they do have it, Mr. Marie. The confusion was whether they must present on the longer version. Unfortunately, it does not have those slides that I'm talking about, or the shorter version, which incorporates those two or three slides that you're talking about. So now I want them to combine the two insofar as that issue is concerned, because we want to hear how they are responding to AG's findings. Unfortunately, they're not in this longer version. They're in the shorter version. Can we get those slides, three slides, because they are critical for purposes of our discussion going forward?
Could I upload them from my
please,
site?
Please upload them, Brian.
Is it visible, Chair?
Not yet, Brian. Please, it's uploading. Right. Yes, so these are the critical slides,
visible.
Yes.
It's visible.
Sure it is. You can talk to them, General.
Oh, thank you, Chair. In terms of our response, we got this thing, the procurement was not followed, and therefore it was deemed irregular according to PFMA. Now, we then said the National Treasury Instruction Note 3 of 2016-17, it states that preventing and combating abuse in the supply chain management system, that is paragraph 8.1, states that the accounting officer must only deviate from inviting competitive bids in cases of emergency and sole supplier status. We then say, in case of the DOT at that specific time, with the DOT find itself in a state of emergency. And
So on that, so what do you mean by state of emergency at the time?
In a state of disaster, sorry.
What do you mean that there was a state of disaster at the time?
There was a pandemic that time.
But the contract dates from 2017 and the pandemic is 2020.
We are referring to the procurement process which the state was not followed.
I want us to be on the same page. Which procurement process? They are saying the which procurement process are you referring to? I think the AG is deeming the whole contract as irregular because there was no competitive bidding in terms of Section 217 of the Constitution. That's all that they are saying. Sorry. Yes, because there was no competitive bidding. If there is no you can only deviate from competitive bidding in cases of emergency, or we are dealing with a sole supplier. Now you are saying in your response, in this case, the DOD was in a state of emergency. The question is, what measures are you referring to, or state of disaster are you referring to?
I just want to add to what you said, because remember, I think the CELOC is referring to the medicine importation, while you are quite right, the Auditor General has referred to the whole Tusano, both the two main contracts plus all the subcontracts are irregular, and you are quite right. And even in that state of emergency, one must remember that even the Minister of Defense at that time, and it's in our minutes, said there was no state of emergency. Yeah. That's not true.
I just want us to be on the same page, General, before we pass to the next point, so that we're clear that we're talking about the same thing. Because if General, if AG makes a finding and you are responding to it, so unless both of you are at id adem, it will be difficult for us to even entertain the discussion.
Chair, if I may say, the ACSA finding, as I'm having it here, it says, ACSA confirms that the department did not follow any procurement processes, nor did they obtain permission for any deviations prior to entering into various supplementary agreements with the Cuban entity.
So in this case you are referring to supplementary contracts that you deviated from them because there was a state of emergency or state of disaster. I just want to understand exactly what are you talking about. Because the issue of state of disaster must be related to the procurement contracts that are in question. Mr. Tabo, you want to assist?
To assist, but I'm also now getting confused, Chair. If they can assist us in terms of which audit are they responding to? Because these audits, in my understanding, they happen annually. Now, are we dealing with the overall audit of the whole term of the contract? Because if you speak of things that happened in 2015, I don't think the one slide will respond to all those audit findings. Probably they are responding to a specific audit finding that happened in this the previous or the current financial year. If they can clarify, maybe we'll be in the same page, because seemingly, Chair, you are talking about the whole contract, they are not responding to the whole contract and the audit that happened prior. That clarity is necessary.
Thank you very much, Chabo. You are correct. General?
Chair, a major general challenge. I think the confusion that we seem to be dealing with is justified, because the paragraph that we are reading here deals with two things. There's an emergency which started in 2019, then we acted upon it in 2020, which relates to COVID-19. The last sentence of the paragraph. But the first sentence of the paragraph talks to the initial contract of the contract that between us and Cuba, which has nothing to do with emergencies, as you indicated.
Correct.
So this paragraph deals with two things. Now, where the first one would be then, why supply chain management system was not followed in entering into the first contract.
Correct.
In 2016, in fact, it would be 15-16 financial year, because Project Tusano started effectively in 2015. That's why you would see that in slide number 40,
Don't move far from that point. We'll get back to the general. I think you are correct to say that this paragraph incorporates two things. Number one, it seeks to address the original contract.
Yes, sir.
But at the same time, if you look at the response, it deals with issues that happened in 2021. When in actual fact, the original contract was in the years before that, 15-16 financial years.
Well,
then let me read what the AG is saying. I'm taking it from my own notes. The AG says, the department did not follow any procurement processes, nor did they obtain any deviation prior to entering into various supplementary agreements with the Cuban entity. Therefore, the expenditure incurred under the Operation Tusano was deemed to be irregular and should be disclosed as such. Now, what does this paragraph now seeks to address that finding, but at the same time it refers to issues that happened much later. I don't know what are you trying to say here, General? You crafted this thing.
Yeah, can we then, if you allow us, Chair, can we then respond to what you have just read?
Correct.
And then we deal with the emergency issue and the irregularities which followed as flagged by AGSA. For the sake of clarity and progress on what we are dealing with, if you allow us.
Yes, yes, please go ahead, General.
Sure, thank you very much. Let's probably then tackle the first part, as you indicated, that DOD did not follow any procurement process prior getting into contract with Cuba, which gave birth then to Project Tusano. Our frame of reference and thinking when we started with Tusano, we wanted services, goods and services from Cuba. And we did this on the basis of the bilateral we have. And we have done this not just with Cuba before 2015. We have had a lot of engagements with other countries. As we speak, we've got students in China that are doing logistic training. We've got students in Russia that are doing training there. And all of those are services that have been provided to us as a department. And we manage those through the bilaterals we have with China and Cuba as an example. I mean, we have done this even with UK. And when we deal with these countries, when we require services on defense-to-defense relations, we anchor ourselves on the bilateral agreements we have. Now, when we then got to the problem that we have with technical services in the DoD in general, we then, through our visit to Cuba, we find out that Cubans are able to deal with the technical problems they have. And then we then said, can you then look at this thing and see if you cannot actually assist us the way you have survived the trade embargo as Cuba? And on the basis of that, Project Pusano was born. We did not see that there is a need for us to go through procurement processes to acquire those services from Cuba, because we have done it before, because we wanted skills to be transferred to our people. And those transfer of skills led to then the mechanical work, because we've got, we are dealing with two contracts, 0102 contracts, one vocational, one for technical skills that are provided or given to us by Cubans. All of that was to deal with the outsourcing. Now, the outsourcing that we had is actually explained, not in so detailed, but in slide 48 of what the general has presented. So based on these bilaterals we have with Cuba, as we have them with all other countries we are dealing with at the SANDF, we then requested Cuba to assist us with dealing with the outsourcing of technical services. We were actually doing injustice to the people that we train and we don't utilize. We would qualify our deafies or technical officers, but we don't utilize them in our workshops, which was irregular on its own. It was just the best thing that we were doing. Then SANDF decided that this we put a stop, and this reflected on the expenditure in 2014. In 2015, you will see that it is 0-0 expenditure towards outsourcing. And then we changed our focus to Project Pusano, Cuba assisting us in getting us out of the woods. That's basically what happened. And with that frame of reference, we did not see that it's actually necessary to go through the procurement processes, because we had a bilateral which we thought we could actually use without going through the procurement process as prescribed by National Treasury. That's one part that we dealt with from 2015 to 2019. So anything in between was anchored around that process or that approach. Then after 2019 or 2020, it's a different case which we can actually be dealing with. Chair, I would like to pause if I'm permitted to do that. Thank you.
Okay. All right, General. So in other words, the paragraph, the first paragraph must be split, is that what you are saying, into two matters between 2015 and 2019, and then matters between 2019 and contracts between 2020 and now.
That would be our submission, sir.
Okay, so in other words, if the department says we were responding to the state of disaster, it refers to the contracts in the years 2020 and 2022.
We are actually referring to the subject in question now, interferon.
Oh, I see. I think it should be specific. That's it. If you had mentioned that, would have really passed a long time ago, because it's an issue that we have conversed. And it's been a subject of many of thorough discussion. All right, we can move to, so this talk to interferon. Okay, we can move to the next paragraph.
Thank you, sir.
The table, are you happy with this?
Yeah, no, they have clarified us, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's move to the next paragraph.
The next paragraph, Chair, if it's crafted correctly, of signing the contract with Cuba is deemed irregular. I think we have touched on it in our opening statement, which actually anchors our discussion on the bilateral agreement between the two countries. And I think in our response to AGSA, we actually went at length to quote paragraphs of the bilateral agreement between the two countries.
We can move to the next paragraph. I think you have elaborated on the original contract and how it came about that you entered into. You came up with Operation Tosa. Yes. You want to say something?
So I was just saying, Chair. Sorry, sir. I was just saying that the expenditure in care and approaches to SAN, if you look at these three paragraphs, they are actually interlinked. And they are talking to the same thing that we are dealing with. Our frame of reference is bilateral agreements. Whether that thinking is right or wrong is subject for discussion some other time. But these three paragraphs to be interlinked. And the explanation we have just given covers all three of them. Thank you, sir.
Okay. No, thank you very much. And the last issue from the AG was that the request for information have been, that's, I'm reading it from my notes, from their presentation on the 16th of March. The request for information have been reissued in the current year. And further engagements were held with the responsible unit managers. However, to date, some of the key information has not yet been provided to us. Any response, reaction to that?
We have responded.
Thank you, Chair.
Which information I can
thank
you, Chair. What you read earlier on the other slide, Chair, all the information that we have, we have responded to AGSA. And it's Mr. Wu who then confirmed that no, we have given
Delmar
Liru. He then wrote back that no, he has received all the everything, the information as it was requested from the DOT. Thank you.
That's what
he said. So in other words, General, you are saying from the date of the 16th of March where this was, when the AJ said this to us, you have since responded to this request for further information?
Correct, sir.
Okay, that's your position?
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. All right. So, colleagues, I think the colleagues have concluded. Are you done with the presentation?
No, sir, Chair. Chair.
Yes, DM.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, I'm sorry to come in out of turn. Just the point that the Chief Logistics has just made now, with respect to the information the Auditor General requested from them. That slide 70, if you look at it, Honorable Chair and members, it says Chief Logistics has responded indeed, as he's just confirmed, to all requests for information. And this has been confirmed by an official, I assume, who is in the Auditor General's office. But the second bullet says, outstanding information from arms of services is being attended to and will be forwarded to the Auditor General. Now, Chief Logistics, CLOC must just explain this point about how we were administratively handling work within Project Tusano. I've been under the impression that everything we were doing as far as this project is concerned in Project Tusano was through Chief Logistics, meaning whatever the arms of services were requisitioning, were requesting within this contract in relation to the needs they have, it was done through Chief Logistics. So the accounting to the Auditor General, I assumed that the logic is that it would be through or by Chief Logistics, because all the arms of service were functioning through the structures of the Chief of Chief Logistics. Now, if Chief Logistics has provided all the information to the Auditor General and we are told the other information will be provided by the arms of service themselves, it creates a bit of a confusion in my mind about exactly what we say. So because we are saying, yes, we've provided information to the Auditor General from the point of view of CLOC, but we have not provided all the information from the point of the arms of service. And who takes responsibility for it is the chiefs of services, who must now account to, Parliament about whatever it is that the Auditor General says has not been responded to. I just thought that there's a need for clarity with respect to that, Chair. I'm sorry to have come in out of time.
You are right, DM. Can you clarify that aspect? Because the issue that has been outstanding from the meeting with the AG was that you have not finished them with the requested information. And now you are saying, yes, some part of information was submitted, but that was in your domain. But the information that was outstanding was information from the chiefs, from the arms of services. Has that information been forwarded to the AG's office, General?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The information that was requested by AG, the RFI, which was sent to the DOD, it then included certain issues which relate to HR.
No, Chief, just clarify the paragraph that you say you have forwarded the information that was within your domain, Chief Logistics. Yes. But the information that was outstanding at the time of crafting this this report was related to matters that were required of the Chiefs of Services, or from the domain of the Chiefs of Services. Have that information been forwarded to the AG South Africa?
Okay, does this refer to this? Because we need to just read the information. Can we just leave it that? Yeah. Are we?
Yeah.
Chair, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, General Charles?
Yes.
Okay, over to you, General Charles.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. I'm sitting here now with the report that was given to us, where RFI DLR 01 the information required, needs assessment. They say that the needs assessment, including objectives supporting of the techno import. Here they are actually looking for how the capacity within the Republic of South Africa was assessed pertaining to the transport technique before decision was made for the with the contract for the contract with Cuban government. How contract amount pertaining to the transport technique was determined. Now, this talks to the needs assessment or needs analysis. How was this done? If I'm interpreting this correctly, sir. I don't know if you have.
General, can you bring back the slide? Just talk to the slide, General. Maybe you. All what we need is the slide 70. Can you beam it again?
Okay. Bring up the slide.
Chairperson, remember that slide 70 that they do not, seemingly in their presentation, do not have.
Well, it's in that, it's in the shorter version. It's slide 20. Brian is, please present the slides that they've given, the information the presentation have given us.
What about this?
Brian, are you winning?
No. Chair was attempting to share, but then it seems they are also sharing from their part.
So in means that you can't share when they are sharing, when they are attempting to share?
I was interrupted as I was sharing, sir.
Oh, I see. Can you stop that exercise on your part and so that we let Brian do it?
Okay, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is it visible, Chair?
Yep, it's visible on my side, Brian.
Correct. This is the portion. All right. I invite either yourself, General Charles, or the General Mbuli, to explain what you mean by this.
Chair, from my understanding is that the what we were trying to attempt to do is to actually flag the type of information which is outstanding from the services. Now, from the report by IG dated 06 of May 2022, that was given to General Mbuli. Page 6 of that is actually talking to the type of information which we are referring to there that is actually sitting with the services. Now, Deputy Minister of Defence said it correctly that Lock Division is the nodal point for Tuzano activities in terms of managing the contract and accounting on the activities of the contract. Now, this the report refers to an information which seeks to give clarity on how the requirements were determined, which found expression to the contract that we are talking about. Now, they need that information, and that information is supposed to be coming from the services. Let's make an example in this case. If we talk about a contract before 2020, SEMS, as an example, they determined the requirements of medical doctors based on their own environmental analysis at the medical services. They determine the number of doctors they need, the psychologists they need, social workers they need. And those requirements were determined by a service, medical services in this case as an example. And that was presented to the military council, and SG was allowed to go to Cuba to negotiate whether Cubans can actually deliver on these requirements or not. This is how we determine the requirements of a service which find an expression to the contract. And once those agreements are done between the chief of a service and Cuba, then Techno Import determines the rents and cents or dollars or the amount we need, we will pay for the services which we need from Cuba. This is how this was determined. But it had nothing to do with log division as a log division. It would be done by services with Cuba on authority by Chief Sandaf or the military council. Once that is done, a contract is developed, then that contract will be given to Chief Sandaf. He will sign it off on behalf of the organization, and then an invoice will follow after that. That invoice will be given together with a signed contract, will be given to Chief of
Sorry, General. We don't need details. We yes. all need to know. You see, there was AG said there is information that we have requested. We have requested information from the department that at the time of their presentation, they had not been furnished with. That was on the 16th of March. And today we're receiving a report that says, number one, that says logistics has responded to all requests for information from the AG. Then the second paragraph, outstanding information from arms of services is being attended to and will be forwarded to the AG South Africa as soon as possible. All right. Then the question we're asking, has this information from the arms of services been submitted, sent to the AG as requested?
No, it looks like that information was not submitted. What the bullet on the slide is correct to say that information
Let's leave it at that.
Thank you, sir.
That's all what we need. Just an update on this one. I saw AG's end. AG wanted to come in on this one.
Thank you, Jefferson. Much appreciated. Yes, Jefferson, good morning to yourself and to the committee and everyone else in attendance. I just wanted to also clarify, but the committee has since pursued the point, but it's important to note that there are still information outstanding from the log division as well. For instance, certain supplements to the contract that are outstanding, which is directly under the control of the log division. We can provide the committee with the full details of that afterwards. We've also got Mr. Diamalaru in the meeting. Should it be necessary for him to specifically give feedback on that. Thank you, Jefferson. But Jefferson, just before I go, I think another important point is that we also wanted to visit one of these workshops, because the audit that we are busy with is what we call a value for money audit. And we were actually, the arrangements was made to visit the workshop, and we would have visited the workshop on the 28th of April. And then we were informed by the general that we can actually not visit the workshop, and that we're not allowed to have access to the workshop. Jefferson, which is contrary to the stipulations of the Public Audit Act. Thank you, Jefferson.
Okay, thank you. All right. Now, this I escalated to the Deputy Minister and SECDEF. SECDEF first and then Deputy Minister. How do we move forward on this? Before we, because there may not be any need to discuss this, because it's clear that we don't have all the information present. Yes, who's that?
CILOC,
sir. SECDEF?
CILOC.
No, we're at SECDEF now. SECDEF, you've
heard... Chairperson, I think that in terms of the way forward, And in relation to the outstanding information, I would then engage with the various chiefs of the services, but I think that it's critical that I also speak to the chief SANDF so that then he can also give them the instruction for that information to be given. I think that should help in taking us forward, Chairperson.
The AG's office also wants to go on site to do value for money analysis.
Yes, Chairperson, this will be all included because I think that in the, as I had mentioned yesterday, I had actually spoken with the AG because with some of the information that was outstanding, we thought that they could get it from the log environment. And unfortunately, they said it comes from the services, and the visit then of the AG to the log didn't materialize because then we also needed to talk to the chiefs to go to those areas. They will determine whether there are areas where they would allow them to go or not. So I think really here the greater role will be played by the chief of the SANDF. That's why I'm pleading that I be given the opportunity to talk to him to facilitate the process.
Okay. DM, before I open it for discussion, do you want to say anything on this at this stage? The sector has made an undertaking.
Yes. thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I actually thought, Chair, that with respect to the discussion of the Auditor General's report on TuSANU, the issues would have been better explored and shared by the Secretary for Defense. because from the presentation, what is said in relation to matters of the Auditor General's office, it's not sufficient. And I was not worried because I thought that the Secretary for Defense was going to come in and speak to the issues of the Auditor General's office. There is a need for us to respond comprehensively to the matters raised by the Auditor General. And of course, the request for information, which has areas that are still, outstanding. It's very relevant to that question. It's very relevant. I do understand that implied in the response of General Charles is that the outstanding information from the arms of service, not that the report suggests that the information was going to be forwarded directly by the arms of service themselves. It was information that was still to be submitted by the chief logistics to the Auditor General. But the chief logistics was waiting for that information from the arms of service for his office to be able to submit. And if that is the case, you see the first paragraph is a bit misleading because when the chief logistics says, I have responded, as if the other information outstanding, it's not the responsibility of his office. You are tempted to conclude that then the information submission is the responsibility of the arms of service themselves. But it is clear now, as the Auditor General is saying, the official from the Auditor General's office, it is clear that we have outstanding information, and that's just the long and short of the story. And that information must be submitted by Chief Logistics to the Auditor General. But secondly, also to say, of course, it is concerning that the Auditor General, if the report is accurate, was not allowed access to do verification audit-wise, the way they go about them. That should not be inhibited. And the Secretary for Defense, it is the responsibility of the Secretary for Defense to make sure that that happens. And of course, the Secretary for Defense, in order to facilitate that, to make sure that the her office provide the accountability that the oversight of Parliament expects from her office, has to get the chief of the South African National Defence Force to intervene and make that possible. And I think we should leave the matter there, Honourable Chair and members, and allow the Secretary for Defence to get these, outstanding, concerns attended to. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, colleagues. The matter, I'm sorry we have tried this matter before you could have a word on it, but I thought we needed first to unpack it so that our meeting moves smoothly. Mr. Mare, you are first. And let me just note the hands first. I saw you, Mr. Mare. This is Mr. Mare, right? And who else?
Chair, maybe even before you take the hands.
Okay, even before I take the hands, Thabo.
I'm not sure because we were looking for clarity in the process of the presentation. If from their side they are done because there were engagement, this is unprecedented, Chair. Normally we don't find ourselves in such situation. Are they done with their presentation first before we engage, because our concentration in the main is on the Auditor General issues. But have they concluded their presentation?
Okay. Thabo, I'll come back to you, Mr. Mare. I think Thabo is assisting. Our focus is on the AG's findings. We're not going to discuss the presentation on the audit to Sunday because it's a matter that is subject to value for money analysis. And but I will come to Mr. Mare and hear what he has to say. But before that, have you finished with your responses on the AG's issues, General? I thought you had finished.
Thank you. So yes, we're finished with the presentation and our response to listening to AG's.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, General. And right, I'm taking hands now. Thabo, are you next after Mare?
Yes, Chair.
All right. And any other hand is Mare, Thabo? Mutle, sorry, Mr. Honorable Mutle. Any other hand? Colleagues, I can't, my system is not showing the hands. All right, Mr. Mare. So it means I only have two.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the presentations. And there's just two, before I ask my questions, there's just two points for clarity that I just need to know before I go into my questions. The first one is the information that was given to us, the expenses under Tusano, was the information given up to 2020 or that 1.3 billion or is it up to 2020? That is very important. And then the second one is to General Mbuli. When was he appointed as Chief of Logistics? Just those two, and then I want to ask my questions.
All right. A quick responses to the two questions. General, can you assist? The information was the 1.3 billion rand expenditure that was reported, was it for 6 years? In other words, from 2015 to 2021, but you said 6 years. Is that correct?
That's correct,
from 2015 to 2021.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much.
and the total, you said it was 1.377 million. Okay. And then the second question, when you assumed your duty as head of logistics?
2017,
thank you very much. Mr. Murray?
Thank you very much, Sir Chair. Thank you very much to the General. I want to start off by asking, in 2016, I recall that to us, we were told that Project Lusano will probably last for 5 years. We are now knowing that it will only end in January 2025. Was the original agreement for only the 5 years? Was it extended, or what was the terms of offers, and why was that extensions being done? Then the second question is, I think in 2015, 2014, there was a decision taken that auctions must stop of all vehicles and equipment. Was that a leading contributor to Tusano? And to what extent was that revenue that was normally generated from auctions being offset against, you know, all these costs that we have incurred? In other words, we would have gotten a lot more revenue from the normal auctions, and we know how many vehicles are still in the parks. Then in the presentation on Tusano, it was said in this presentation today that the procurement of the medicine was under contract 002. But we have been presented as a committee with a letter from Chief Logistics of 14 February 2021, which clearly confirmed that was in fact under 001. And that's in a written document by the Chief Logistics, 14 February 2021. It was on point 3.1.4, supplement number 10 of contract number T117/001, that the interferon was imported. So this is a contradictions. And I want to get clarity on that and how they do justify to get it either under repairs or even under vocational training, how that was done and how that was justified. And then, just a moment, just to get to my next question. To the Secretary of Defense, the Auditor General has specifically in his report to us I think it was March, that AXA has said, and I will read, the accounting officer should take effective and appropriate steps against officials who permitted the irregular expenditure as required by the PFMA and Treasury regulations. Has the Secretary of Defense, as the accounting officer, instituted any actions against anybody for either disciplinary hearings or considerations or for criminal investigations? Because that is an obligation on her, and if she is not doing that, then she is transgressing certain laws, and that will obviously make her liable for prosecution afterward. Then,
are you asking for consequence management in relation to Operation Tusano, Mr. Murray?
Per implication, yes, and specifically with regard to the recommendations and the finding by the Auditor General in that regard, which is obviously an obligation on her.
Sure.
Then I also want to know that on the presentations of today, and that's why I asked
you know, the question specifically, whether that information is up to 2020 or 2021. In a written question of mine to the minister, she responded in details on, amongst other things, aircraft charters. Now, I specifically asked the question until when that was. And, you know, the chartered aircraft given today to us is 120 million. The minister has responded to say that up till about middle of last year, only South African Airways was 136 million. So there's, and that's in writing, it's a written question and a written answer, which is different to this. So that brings me to a point, you know, and even if you look at presentation number 48, which gives the comparison between 2009 industry and Project Dusano, it gives 2021 239 million. And just in the next page, it says projected expenditure for the remainder of the contract, 2021, 277 million. Now, is that 277 million additional to the 239 million? Is it the same thing? And if it's the same thing, why is it different? Why is it different in that? And that brings into question, you know, the reliability and the validity of the information that we must work with. Where they compared the industry and Tusano, how did they compare that information? You know, what was the terms of reference and things like that? Just so that we can compare apples with apples, and obviously that's a comprehensive answer. And if they need to give it in writing afterwards, I don't have a problem with that. And then, Chairperson, towards the end of my question is, just a justification. If I look on the shorter version today, where they said responses to the AG, which Brian has flagged, it clearly says that in this case, the DoD was in a state of emergency and a state of disaster has been mentioned. I want to take you back to a presentation that we have received in February of 2021. February 2021, and General Talisi will remember that he has also referred to a state of emergency and the threat of biological warfare. And in that minute of us that was presented to Parliament, there is the input of the minister. And I will just read the one paragraph. There's a lot of responses by her where she added that the notion that the SANDF was engaged in biological warfare has never been discussed, not even at the National Command Council, and do not know where this originates from. So that brings back to the notion now that there was a state of emergency. The state of emergency can only be declared based on the Constitution.
No, he corrected. No, he said it was the state of disaster.
Yeah, well, state of disaster, state of emergency. In his presentation, says state of emergency. But remember, the state of disaster.
No, he corrected it, Mr. Mare. He said the contracts in question were in terms of the state of disaster. That's the reason why they did not go for the bidding processes.
Well, remember what they said, and I just want to say who declared the state of disaster, because we know that the state of disaster that was declared in South Africa for the COVID do not exclude the Department of Defense for acting in their own way. There's other emergencies, and when it's a state of war, then they can do that, not in a state of disaster. So that brings me back to the question. Who declared and who confirmed to them that in terms of either a disaster or an emergency, that they can do whatever they want to? We know that the minister has stated that's not the case. It was never done. I think the Auditor General has also stated at one stage that in the normal state of disaster where we are in under COCTA, there was no justification and authority to the Defence Force to doing that. Now today they're again saying that as an excuse, and I want clarity on that. If not by General Chalisi or the Chief Logistics, then by the Minister or the Accounting Officer, Secretary of Defence, because this is contradictory to what the Minister has said to us. And by certain officials. Thank you, Chair. I will stop there. Oh, the last point: the service contracts of 1 billion rand that they said. But what is that for? For servicing the contracts, 1 billion rand, 900, just short of 1 billion rand, for the servicing of these two main contracts. What does that entail? Because that is quite a huge number, and remember, we've only used 140 Cubans in the whole process, and that gives an enormous cost per 140 or per Cuban that we have utilized. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Murray. Mr. Mutler?
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. I want to make a disclaimer even before I ask question. You see, the manner in which we are proceeding with the issues that are defense-related seeks to suggest to me that we've got an incoherent way of doing things as a government in totality, because seemingly the defense is crying out loud for a different dispensation. But it's an engagement that we must have on another day. My question in relation to the presentation and around maybe because the AG is also in the meeting, will be able to assist. Because the finding is that there were no the irregularities are as a result of the Defence Force doing things without following the procurement process in relation to the contract of Tusano. And I think to some extent, General Chalice has explained their understanding, which is not necessarily the understanding of the AG, which is guided by the prescripts of the law, the PFMA, and their audit prescripts. And I think comparing apples and bananas might be problematic. You see, if you send students to China and send students to any other country that you want them to acquire a certain skill or knowledge that they must come back and impart or utilize in the country is different from the services that we are talking about under Project Tusano. Because if you look at one slide, and I want to believe that procurement processes were followed when the defense industry was involved in the same process that Tusano came in 2015-16 to come and provide those particular services. I'm not sure how best can the matter be resolved. Maybe the AG can advise what does he think that should have been done in case where the Defence Force wanted a specific service from a particular country. and they did not want to go to a procurement process where they will invite any other country. They wanted a specific service from a specific country. Probably they should have motivated and went to Treasury for condonement. I'm not sure. Is that what they should have done? That's what I want to establish, that they should have done something and they have not done it, and they tend to ignore all those processes that they should have undertaken, taking into consideration that they were focused on a specific services and capabilities from that particular country. Maybe the AG can assist. What is it that they should have done as opposed to what they have done? But also from the LOC division team, they can compare apples with bananas. Those are different services. Sending students elsewhere and acquiring service, it can be treated the same way. Maybe you should explain what informs you to treat them the same. And if you are referring to other contracts that of a similar nature, maybe you can just take us into confidence, if possible. What contracts are you referring to with which countries, and what are the audit outcome on those particular contracts? Because that is the advance that you are making, to say you never thought it will be a problem because we have been doing this with other contracts. And I think on the one of PPEs and the like, I think Chair, we have engaged thoroughly with that one. I will not want to expand on that one. Thank you very much. If the AG can also assist, and they come and also assist in terms of what I've just posed. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mutle. AG, can we just quickly deal with the issue that Mr. Mutle is raising before I ask the department to deal with the rest of the issues?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, the Honourable Member is correct. In a situation where a department or a public entity cannot comply with the procurement prescript, then it can approach National Treasury and motivate for a deviation. So that would have been the only option in this case, to approach National Treasury for approval, which National Treasury could then grant or not grant based on whatever the fact is that has been presented to them. Thank you, Chairperson.
Maybe Thabo, Mr. Mutle will follow up and say, if the National Treasury does not grant, would the department still go ahead? Mr. Lawrence Van Furen, the question is, if the answer is negative, would you still go ahead? And
thank you, Chairperson. So if the department then still goes ahead, it also then results in irregular expenditure, because it then transgressed the laws without the relevant deviation being approved, Chairperson.
Okay. No. Thank you very much. Mosha, do you want to make a quick follow-up?
Thank you, Chair. The question will then be left with the CLOC division to respond. Why didn't they follow those processes?
Okay. Thank you very much. Right, let's then deal with all the questions that has been raised. I guess I finished all the hands, colleagues. Brian, can I confirm that? Have I exhausted all the hands? Okay. Colleagues, may I invite...
That's correct, sir.
Sure. Let me invite General to deal with the issues that have been raised. Maybe the general is muted. I can't hear him.
Major General Kelly is speaking. Can I go ahead, Chair?
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. I'm going to go slowly, and I will attempt to respond to most of them. Where I fall short, then I will request my colleagues to assist with the response if you allow that share to happen, please. The first one is the extension of the Tusano contract. It is actually true that Tusano started in 2015, and initially we thought that we'll be able to develop skills we need to address the problems we have on outsourcing. And the initial period of this contract, I'll be under correction now, but it was around 5 years. But then the 5 years came and we still had students in Cuba, because the technical skills and engineering, especially in Cuba, they take about 6 years if you include the year for the language. Because when they go, they've got to do the language first for a year, and then after that, they start with the actual training. Now, if I must make an example, the engineers which we sent from the SA Army, we wanted these people to be able to design and manufacture spares. I think the committee would remember that we only get spares in the SANDF through AMSCO. And AMSCO is also using then private companies to deliver these spares to us. And most of the time, it takes time. And we wanted to establish some kind of a self-sustainment of the SANDF through that process, where we will train our own people to be able to design and create molds, and a spare should actually be manufactured after that. Now, the initial part of the contract came and we were not ready, and we hadn't achieved what we wanted to achieve, in as far as what I've just indicated now. And most of the issues which came together with the Cubans is the attitude towards repairing of yuppies. Now, outsourcing came with this directive that says that our technical service components are not allowed to work on the vehicles, especially disassembling, an example, starter of a B vehicle variant. That was a log instruction that said they are not allowed to touch that. So what we were doing since, I think this must have started around 1998 under correction. And that time, we were just doing...
I'm running out of time, General. Which questions are you addressing?
The extension, why we extended to them beyond the initial 5 years.
Yes, no, it's fine. You said it's 6 years because, for a student, I think you make that as an example. It's 5 years plus 1 year, so it's 6 years. And... do you still want to say a bit more on that, on the extension from 5 to 6?
That qualifies it, as you have indicated.
Come again?
It qualifies the answer, as you have indicated, Chair. We can leave it at that.
Please. I thought you had done it. I can see now going into other details now, trying to motivate why you chose Operation Tusano.
Okay, sir.
Yeah. Can we move to the next question?
The next question, Chair, was why did we stop the auctioning of especially the vehicles? The answer to that, a quick one, is that the B vehicles which we are referring to or which we were auctioning, they actually had spares which we needed to fix the vehicles which needed to be fixed. What we discovered with the auction which we authorized, as an example, I can just give an example to Chair. We were once requested to give vehicles which we wanted to dispose to Mozambique. And these vehicles were given to Mozambicans. And after 6 months, we were requested as the SA Army to actually fix these vehicles. And we fixed them at a fraction of what you would actually get. Before 2014, we were spending on a sum of 20. On average, we were spending about 300,000 rands on average just to fix that vehicle. And when they were fixing these vehicles, they would actually take our own component like a starter, respray, fit it on the vehicle, and it will look like it's a new component. And we discovered that the vehicles which we are actually auctioning, we are supposed to farm spares from these vehicles, and we did that.
I think you've dealt with that point adequately. Can you move to the next item?
The next one, Chair, is why did we then say interferon was purchased through a 02 contract, not 01 contract? That mistake was corrected.
In actual fact, it's 01, it's not 02.
02 is vocational, 01 is service, goods and services.
Okay, so you okay, that's fine. We can move to the next point.
So
error, yeah, okay.
Okay, the issues of consequence management is sector, the issues of the chartered aircraft, I think that my relative will deal with that. The other one, Chair, is the comparison with the industry, between the industry and Project Tucson.
You see, I would better leave that to the AG because it's doing a value for money exercise.
Okay.
I don't think
is that the exercise for value for money, Chair? Chair, can you hear me?
He would still be happy with it. But I thought AJ is dealing with those matters.
Well, can we then skip the value for money issue?
Can we skip it?
Okay, thank you, Chair. I am not sure if I must actually respond to the state of disaster versus biological warfare. If I must actually put that into context, I don't know if Chair wants me to deal with that. Chair?
Yes. I think the issue was the state of disaster.
Chairperson, it was a question as to who authorized them or under what was they authorized to ignore that or to do whatever they want to. Because as I've said, the minister has indicated to us that was not the case, it was not even discussed. So in other words, if they act within that and think that they've got impunity, then they must at least tell us how do they get to that? Because clearly the minister doesn't agree with it.
Mr. Murray, do you still want an answer? There's an audit opinion on this matter, audit from the AG. This issue has been audited and discussed before.
But today it was still again given to us as an emergency or a state of disaster, which is not true.
Yeah, can we pass? It's been audited. And unless you want to put it differently. Unless you want to put it differently, you want to pose the question differently, Mr. Murray.
Well, you know, today, whatever they have said, whether it's a state of emergency, my question was basically is who under what? I know it was audited, and the Auditor General said that that was unauthorized and it was not justified. They are claiming still that it is authorized because of this emergency. And I've read from the minutes where the minister has clearly differed with them in that regard, that authority.
Okay.
So why are they still claiming that if that is not the case?
All right. Charles, just be quick on this one.
Just to put this thing into context, because as military, just to be brief, Chair, as military, when we are faced with a problem that seems to be a military problem, we go through a military appreciation process. And that military appreciation process informs the response to a problem that seemed to be a military problem. Now, in this case, yes, we were faced with a situation that seemed to be a military problem because there was no clinical research or outcome of some research that was given to us to say, this is exactly what is it that you are dealing with. Because this pandemic was dealing with the organs of a human being. Now, when it deals with organs of a human being, to us, it takes us to the thinking of a biological warfare type of thinking. We never said that we were dealing with biological warfare, but we were saying our frame of reference and our appreciation in this. And there's no way that the Defense Force will declare a state of disaster or an emergency in a country. We were responding to the clarion call by the Commander-in-Chief to say, deal with the situation as you see it. And we went through our own appreciation. Now, our own appreciation was saying that because we were at level 5 lockdown, then we were dealing with the emergency. Because most factories were locked, people were in their houses, it's only military that was allowed in the streets. So to us, it seemed as an emergency, and we responded in that fashion based on our military appreciation process. Thank you.
That was corrected in the presentation. Not an emergency, but it happened during the state of disaster. Are you going back to the emergency now as an excuse?
No, state of disaster.
That's the confusion. That's the confusion, Chairperson.
Yeah. Can we leave it? You are confirming that the issue is the state of disaster and not the state of emergency?
Disaster is declared by the country.
Okay, sure. All right. And can we move to the next point?
Mr. Murray was, the Honorable Murray was seeking clarity on the servicing of the contracts and trying to get the details on what is it that we mean by servicing the contract.
So, Mr. Murray, the question is, the total cost of the contract so far over a period of 6 years is 1.3 billion rand.
Yes, sir.
But the question is this 1 billion rand part of this 1.3?
Are you talking to me, sir?
Yes, I think that was the question.
Yes, it's everything of the contract.
They have said it's part of that, but I want to know, you know, what does that mean? What does that entail to say servicing the contract of a billion?
So what does that mean?
Chair, we have two contracts. First contract deals with the skills development of the students in Cuba, as was explained during the presentation. The second contract deals with the services, goods and services as we are talking about now, fixing of the vehicles and all of that. Those details were actually tabled during the presentation. That's what that money goes to.
Includes labor, cost of labor and cost of spares.
Yes, including welfare support to the Cubans in South Africa, the medical brigade that is there, all of that is detailed on the contract, is managed as a contract. So.
Okay, that is noted. And then can you deal with the next questions, Mutle's questions?
Chair, thank you very much. I think Honorable Mutle is correct. When we actually, when he said that the Defence Force seemed to be crying out for a different dispensation. And I think Defence Force in discharging some of these its duties, especially under disaster in certain situations as declared by the country, a new dispensation needs to be devised for this type of a situation. Because if this was done, we wouldn't be where we are now in terms of what we are talking about. And also the second one is the comparison between the Cuban services and the services that were rendered to other state departments. If I can just make an example in the interest of time, Chair. Defence Force is not the only department that deals with Cuba. Department of Health has 60 services from Cuba. Similar services as we are getting as well, skills development, and this is not flagged as an irregular engagement, not unless I don't understand what we are actually trying to deal with. So we are actually not saying that sending students to China and Russia is different from what Department of Health is doing with Cuba. We deem that as the same thing. And there were even instances where we shared an aircraft with Department of Health, sending students and receiving students from Cuba. So we never thought that this thing would actually be treated different as it seems now with Department of Defense. That's our frame of reference, Chair.
All right. I'm not asking your colleagues to raise new questions. Have all your questions been dealt with, Mr. Murray?
It has been responded to. Whether it's satisfactory, that's obviously another question.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mr. Murray. Mr. Mutle?
Thank you very much. That's my concern is around the last response from General Chalice. You see, I think quite a number of institutions are supporting students to go and study at various institutions, domestically and internationally. And I think it's treated differently. And you can't treat support to students for acquiring knowledge as the same as acquiring services from Cuba in a form of Project Tusano to come and service your equipment. It's not the same. If you treat them the same, it becomes problematic. I think even the Auditor General can come in and clarify this point. Even when they audit, are they auditing as the same? Do you say because we have sent students to Cuba and Cuba now has sent mechanics to come and do services, they are not here to learn? If Cuba was sending their students to come to South Africa, it was something different. But now they are in South Africa to service your equipment and you want to treat it the same. That's why I don't understand, Chair.
I agree with Honorable Mutle.
All right, Mr. General Chalice.
So our thinking was that the Cubans are here. They are not servicing our vehicles, but they are transferring skills to us. They are working with SANDF members, so it's a joint effort. If they were here just to come and fix our vehicles and go back to Cuba, it would be a different story. But it's a joint effort. We are working with them in the workshops, and I would like to invite the committee when they visit. They will actually see that it's Cuba, South Africans working on our vehicles. We just wanted skills to be transferred in this case, it's just hard skills, not theory, that is transferred to us by Cuba. So we regarded that as part of training still, but in South Africa, being physical or practical in our vehicles. They are not servicing our vehicles. We are working with them in our workshops. Thank you.
Okay.
Chairperson, can I just raise what Honorable Mutlu said? I mean, there are two contracts. One is for vocational training and the other one not.
No, Mr. Mame, that's a value for money question.
Spinning.
Come again?
No, I said this is just spinning.
Let's leave it at that. I don't think Mr. Mutlese is satisfied with the response. With the responses, he's not. I think he has not indicated it. Not indicated satisfaction or not or no satisfaction. But let's leave it at that for now. Do you still want to pursue it, Mr. Mabe?
No, Chairperson, I mean, you know my sentiments. I think it is a very disappointing today. Again, blame shifting left, right and center. I think this is, we have gone through this so many times.
Okay.
And still it seems like today we are going back to 2020 and all the excuses.
Okay. No.
At that stage.
Mr. Mutla, do you still want to pursue it beyond this answer?
So it's fine. I think I will then request you to call the AG maybe to also assist, because my question was based or posed to two of them, the Defence Force and the AG, in terms of comparison.
AG, do you want to venture? Do you want to deal with the answer now, or you leave it to your analysis, value for money analysis, and conclusions, finding the conclusions?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. No, we value the inputs from the committee, and we will most definitely look at that during our analysis. But I think just as a basis of principle. So there are cases which would make sense to go for training to a specific country. Let's say, for instance, a fighter jet was bought from a specific country, let's say France. Then it's possible that you might only get the training for that specific fighter plane in France. So there will be cases where it will be justified that you can only go to a specific place for training, or if that training that's needed in a very, very specialized area which is not available in South Africa, that it would be justified for that specific training. Thank you, Chair. But we will follow up on it during the audit. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, colleagues. I think we have exhausted the issue. And the SECDEF, we said she will endeavor to talk to the chief of the SNDF about the information that was still outstanding. That is within the domain of the chiefs of services. So I think it's an admission that not all information requested has been submitted to the AG. So prefer that it should be attended to. Again, we're making a plea. We did it on the 16th of March when it was first reported that there was this outstanding, there was outstanding information, and you were in the meeting, SECDEF. We asked the team to write to the minister again, I mean the AG, to bring this to the attention of the minister, and which the AG did. They wrote to the minister on the 23rd of March, saying that they are still experiencing difficulties in obtaining all the requested information, despite escalations to the Chief of Logistics and the SECDEF. Despite escalations to the Chief of Logistics and to the SECDEF. In other words, it's not new, SECDEF, that the AG is experiencing difficulties in sourcing information from the
from the Department of Defense. It's not new, and it's not new to you, it's not new to us, and it should not be new to you. And we are concluding now. So we afford you another opportunity to ensure that the as an accounting officer, that the AG receives this information that is outstanding. Unless there is a good reason why the information cannot be shared with the AG. Maybe it's in the sensitive areas and so on and so forth. So, but there's a way of dealing with that. So again, we're leaving that with you. And two, the AG says they wanted to do an on-site value for money analysis, but that was cancelled. And they wish that it be reinstated, that on-site visit be reinstated. And I also ask you to ensure that that happens effective. And I'm asking you in your capacity as an accounting officer for the department, how you go about it, and we leave it in your hands. Now, we give you a week. We'll come back next week to give feedback, to get feedback on how you have, whether these issues have been attended to. So we'll bring this thing up at the next meeting. Just to say, AG has received all the requested information and that they've been able to go on site and do whatever verification that they needed to do. All right? So we'll look at it at the next meeting, Wednesday next week. So we'll close this.
There's just one question of mine that is outstanding, and that was the one to the Secretary of Defense with regards to the Auditor General's recommendation in that report to us, where he said that the accounting officers should take effective and appropriate steps. Has anything been done, or what is the progress in that regard as well?
Yes, SecDef, that was the question. I'm sorry, Mr. Murray, my apologies.
Chairperson, I hear what Honorable Murray is saying, but we are all aware that the audit is still in progress and AG's report is going to come at the end of July. Now, at the end of July, they would have also done their work in relation to the value for money, because all of us see how complex the project is. And once that is finalized, we will take the process from there, because with AG, they will come back and tell us whether there was value for money or no value for money. And then we will have to institute our own actions within the organization to make sure that we deal with that, whatever challenges would have been raised by the AG. So, and that will dictate to us the process we need to follow. On the other issues, Jefferson, I agree with you. I would actually look at them. And I also want to apologize, because the last time that the AG came back to us to say they needed more time, we had an engagement with them and an engagement with the colleagues from the logistics environment to allow them to come and look at the information that they have. And then they deal with what they are looking for as the AG. Unfortunately, where I was sitting, I was told that yes, they had been allowed to go there, and only to find that then when they got to that environment, they were told that they cannot have access to that unless then it is approved by the chief of the SANDF. So I take the points that are being raised. I'll follow up with the chief and we'll revert back to you next week.
No, we'll take that point, SecDef, and we'll leave it at that. So next week, Wednesday, we'll get feedback on progress you are on making in this regard. So we want to stop to leave the matters at that for now, and it has taken all the time, in fact, close to 2 hours to deal with this one item. In fact, more than 2 hours, I'm sorry. All right. The next item, colleagues, is the presentation on the internal audit, by the internal audit and the audit committee. May I invite the chief audit executive to do the presentation?
Chair, if I may ask, how do you prefer we deal with this? Because I see that the time is 20 to 1 and we're supposed to finish at 1, so I'm just not so sure.
Let's take the presentation and the colleagues, can we stretch until 1:30?
Okay.
Okay. There's no objection. Colleagues, can we then run with the presentation? It will be one after the other.
Honorable Chairperson and members of the PCB, Honorable Deputy Minister of Defence and Military Veteran, Secretary for Defence, Chair of the Audit Committee and AC members, General Senior DOD Officials, Auditor General Officials, and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Figile Mabilane, and I'm going to be presenting on behalf of the Internal Audit Division. I'm the Acting Chief Audit Executive. My slide on the aim. On the aim, Chair, is to present the roles and responsibilities of the Internal Audit Division. The scope, Chair, is it's the vision and mission. The audit approach on this other slide. Excuse me, Chair, I'm just fixing here. Chair, can you still hear us? Yeah. Chair, are we audible? Can they hear us?
Yes, you are audible.
Okay, thank you so much. I'm struggling with the system here. It doesn't want to move my slides. Chair, I'm trying to save time because members do have the presentation. Okay, Chair, apologies for that. We are trying to fix the system here. I'm just going to talk from my slides while they are trying to help me here with the system. The scope that we are going to follow is the vision and mission of the...
The thing is on the system.
We are trying to load it again because it doesn't want to move. Okay, Chair, let me just focus on the mandate of internal audit, which is derived from the PFMA Section 38, that the accounting officer of a department...
I think we are wasting our time.
Okay.
Can you ask the audit committee to come in before you?
once you attend your to the uploading of the information. I can't see it.
You can't see it.
Yes. Are you making okay? Let me give you another the last attempt.
Can you see it now, Chair?
I can see it, yes.
Okay. My apologies for that.
Okay.
Let me just focus on the key areas. Chair, the audits that we follow are risk-based audits on our internal audit plan. We do risk-based audits and we do follow-ups, which is the area that you want to focus on the AGSA report and also our own internal audit findings. And we also have cyclical reviews as internal audit where we audit the legislated reports, which are annual reports, APP, annual financial statements. And we also have ad hoc requests from management whenever there's an emerging risk. For instance, the request that came from the chief financial officer for us to assist the department in identifying irregular expenditures. Those are ad hoc requests, and we do add those also on our plan. The scope of work also covers the type of audits that we do, which are compliance with laws and regulations, and we also do ICT audits and also performance audits. Chair, there's also an element of technical support that we have. I just want to focus on some of the key findings that have been identified by the Internal Audit Division in the year 21-22. The first one talks to goods and services of a transaction value of 10,000 to 500,000 were procured without the minimum 3 written quotations and without approval to deviate. Bid awarded to pay and paid to suppliers whose tax matters were not in order. No declaration of interest by other employees of the department or the suppliers that was attached on the file. There's some CSD reports were out of date and some were not even attached on the file. Systems access on eProcure were granted without defined and approved roles and responsibilities. Changes on eProcure users was not updated on the database. There was no vetting that was done for MSDS by Defense Intelligence for their appointment. Some of the MSDS members candidates were selected even though they did not meet the requirement. Some MSDs were paid without signing appointment letters, which resulted in irregular expenditure. Some vehicles are kept in areas that are not safeguarded at the units, which may result in theft of the vehicles or the parts of the vehicles. Some vehicles were found on the DOD asset register, but not found on the unit's asset register. I must indicate, Chair, that all our findings are discussed with the chiefs of services. They sometimes invite us to their command council where we present our findings, and also at the AMC, our findings are presented and eventually to the audit committee. So there are no findings that we bring here that have not been discussed with management. So this is just a slide that shows the type of audits that we do and how many have we conducted in the past 2 years. For 2021, we have done 42, a total of 42 audits here, which are comprised of the different areas that I indicated, risk-based, cyclical, ad hoc, and follow-ups. And the ones that we planned 42, and we achieved 35. And for 21-22, we planned 40, and we achieved 33. And if you look at how we are now monitoring our own internal audit findings, whether management is implementing their own action plan, there is a presentation that we make to the audit committee on a quarterly basis where we present the action plans, whether they are being implemented. We have a finding tracker. It says a standing item where we list all the findings that internal auditors issue per services and division, and we also indicate the percentage that findings have been implemented. So for the next financial year, 2022-23, we have included 12 follow-up audits, which will cover a bigger scope, just to see if management are implementing their own action plan.
So this is just to show on the AGSA findings whether the department is implementing their own action plan. The first qualification was on goods and services and investment, which is the sensitive project area. So in this area, there's nothing much that we could have done because it's a sensitive environment, but there's an agreement and now that IGDOD will be able to audit that in the near future. So discussions are underway. In terms of the irregular expenditure qualification, Chair, we have been requested by the Chief Financial Officer to assist the department by going to all the procurement centers and uncovering all the unrecorded irregular expenditures that have not been included on the asset on the irregular expenditure register. So the audit is in progress because the work is just a lot than we anticipated, so it has not been finalized. However, so far, the amount of 430 million has been disclosed in the AFS for 21-22 as a result of this exercise. So these are new findings, new irregular expenditure that has been uncovered by the Internal Audit Division, and they have been presented to management. All the chiefs of services that are affected, Army, Air Force, Navy, and CELOC, they have we have presented to them. And a final report will be ready as soon as the audit is done. This is just another area where we were qualified on the movable tangible assets, where AG was indicating that the location could not be indicated of these assets, and there was no other information to support these assets. So we did a follow-up here, and this is the findings that we came up with. The area of the yellow area is the findings that were resolved, 55% and 45% has not been resolved. And these have been discussed with the services that are affected, Chair, in these areas. We do not just come here and present without confirming or discussing with the services and divisions. Employee benefits is an area of leave that were not captured, and this is what we have discovered when we were following up on the action plan. 75% has not been resolved, and 25% has been resolved. This is just our structure, Chair. This was the originally approved structure. Unfortunately, there is no other structure that I can talk to because this is the structure that established the internal audit that was approved by Minister Likota in 2008. It was an approval of 198 officials, and then the funded is 64. The field posts are 54, which only has 46 auditors, and the 144 has not been funded or staffed. The challenges that EAD is facing, we are not able to cover the necessary audit risk universe as required by Treasury regulations, and this is according to the standards. And this results in also an audit finding from AGSA. They have been issuing this for some time, that the staff that is there, the auditors that are there, are unable to cover the risk universe of the department because the department is huge just to have 46 auditors. And also the type of skills that we require, Chair, we are unable to get those. There is some delays in the acquisition of an auditing software, and this results in us having to do manual work, which takes a long time. Systems that are not integrated in the Defence Force, which also makes us our lives more difficult. Some critical vacancies are still not staffed, and this is also a challenge that I want to indicate, that the non-implementation of this structure that was approved for internal audit, because it was based on some IG members that were supposed to be moved to internal audit. This has not taken place. However, there has been some workshops, some interventions that are taking place, and the workshops have done the work, and there's a task team that is working currently on a presentation to be made at the PDSC, but this matter, Chair, has not been resolved. So, and my conclusion, Chair, just to indicate that our role is to evaluate and give assurance and advise on the adequacy and effectiveness of the system of internal controls by providing recommendations to management and how to make improvements and over time to avoid audit qualifications. Our recommendations are provided after each and every audit. There are recommendations that are given to management and so that they can improve their systems of internal control. So if those recommendations can be implemented fully, then over time we can avoid any audit qualification. Thank you, Chair and members.
Thank you very much, Didwell. Under the circumstances, I'm sorry. Yeah, let's ask the chair of the audit committee to do the presentation. Lusanda.
Luyanda.
You'll introduce the team.
Good morning, Chair. It's Luyanda Manuku here.
Luyanda, my apologies.
No problem, sir. Good morning. My name is Luyanda Manuku, and it is a pleasure being here, Chair. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm not by myself, I'm with my colleagues, and there's two of them at this stage. It's Ms. Shaila Harry, she's in the meeting, and also I'm with Mr. Ndlangisa, who's also in the meeting, Chair. So thank you so much for having us, and I'm presenting this presentation on our behalf. I'm going to flight it, and if you allow me just 1 second, and then I'll take us through very quickly, Chair. Chair, we've prepared about just 19 slides, and I'm sure we'll be able to conclude this within the given time. Just quickly going to what we're going to take the committee through, introduction, what our role and function is, the monitoring of the action plan, basically focusing on the AG action plan, and then we'll take the committee chair through the concerns raised with management and the government authority, and then we'll conclude. Now, in terms of the introduction, Chair, what I'd like to say is that we are a statutory committee, which is established in terms of PFMA in the main section 77, and also in terms of chapter 3 of the Treasury regulations. And we play an oversight role, basically overseeing governance in the department, used around risk management and control processes. But of course, you'll see later that touch on also our responsibility to ensure that there's compliance across the department. Also, Chair, just in terms of our appointment, we are appointed by the accounting officer, SACDEF, but she does that in consultation with the minister. And also, should there be a need for us to be discharged, maybe on gross negligence issues, that cannot be done unless the minister is actually involved. And that's just to protect our independence and objectivity to make sure that we are able to serve and complete the work. So yeah, just jump there. Also, Chair, just to highlight that we have unfettered access to all the stakeholders from SACDEF to the chief, although, of course, the chief fairly new. We're still making attempts to meet him. Also, we have unfettered access to the accounting officer, ministry, both the DM and the minister, senior management, AG, internal functions. So we by our terms of reference, are given a free rein to be able to engage, interact and talk with all stakeholders in the department. In terms of the membership of the committee, we currently see, I think SACDEF touched on this earlier, there's only three of us. We were six. We've lost the three of our members, two due to their terms expiring, but the other member, unfortunately, we lost him a few months ago, and processes to replace those vacancies we believe are underway, and we're looking forward to having additional resources, perhaps in the HR space, and also someone with key experience in the defense industry. And of course, legal as well would be quite helpful as we had before. So in terms of basically just very quickly, in terms of our oversight role as an independent function, again, we can't be operational. So what we look at, we provide oversight and monitoring and hold management to account in terms of whether the internal control environment is effective. Also, we are charged with overseeing the effectiveness of the internal function, because they will report to us functionally. Also, as to whether the department has effective risk management systems in place. And also, we drive the scoping of the internal function as well as that of AG. We interact with them a lot when they put down their strategy. Also, what we do, Chair, we would push management hard to make sure that they table before us and in terms of their reporting of financial and non-financial information to make sure that it's adequate, reliable, and accurate all the time. Also, we ensure, Chair, that all concerns identified by internal and external audit are actually addressed. There's an action plan put in place, which is timed with the responsible persons, and that on a quarterly basis we'll follow that up to make sure that management sticks to their commitments. Also, we ensure, Chair, that there's compliance with all relevant statutes, and that we prevent that because it becomes a serious issue if there's any deviation from the law. In terms of just what we do for internal audit and parts of the AG process, we make sure, Chair, that in their annual plans, especially internal audit in the main, that there's coordination, that their work is risk-based, and that also they conduct investigations with the significant issues that we highlight and identify. Also, we make sure, Chair, that from their findings, once internal audit has raised them and even AG has raised them, that management develops immediately a plan to address each of the findings, and that those resolutions, especially drilling down to the root causes to make sure that we prevent recurrence of any findings, is actually put in place and monitor that on a quarterly basis. And I think that last point also touches on the same point to make sure that recommendations are fully implemented. I've touched on that. If I go, Chair, very quickly, in terms of our monitoring exercise, and this is basically the main focusing on the AG findings. What we have done and what we do as an audit committee is that on a quarterly basis, as part of a standing agenda item, we request management to give us an appraisal, an update as to how far have they gone in addressing AG findings. And this, we go through it quite meticulously, and we keep a monitoring oversight role over this to make sure that, Chair, we can bring our concerns if there's any, and we can be able to guide the process so that if there's concerns, perhaps of them not addressing those findings, we would even escalate that to make sure that SECDEF is fully briefed and that the ministry as well is fully briefed so that we can be able to put measures in place so that within the cycle of the, before the next audit comes, we've addressed as many, if not all, the items that AG has raised. And what we'd like as a reflection on where we are with the department to date, that in October 2021, they were issued with a qualified audit opinion. It was the third time in a row that this was actually the outcome of the department, which is sad. So in other words, there is a very heavy burden on all of us involved to push the department in ensuring that they really put measures in place to come out of the qualification. Just reflecting on the 2021 audit, the key qualification issues were around the special defense account in terms of the sensitive areas, which they were not allowed to have unhindered access to. And I think the processes are underway to try and see how we can work around that, but that continues to be a persistent area of qualification. Also, the issues of growing irregular expenditure in the department, but primarily that it was not complete, and hence internal audit went in there to assist, to come through and see if there's any undisclosed irregular. And already there's huge sums which have brought to the fore, which are included in the 2021-22 financials. Also, Chair, one of the qualification areas was actually the issue around movable tangible capital assets. Basically, the asset register of the department was not reliable. Not all the assets that were there, or some were not there yet, should have been there. So there was an issue around the asset register. Also, on employee benefits, the leave records of the department were seen to be incomplete and not up to date. And that was a big issue as well. And the last feature, the qualification error, was around capital commitments and capital work in progress. There were material adjustments which were made by the AG in that regard. And our assessment, Chair, based on what we've seen, and I'll take you through the details very quickly, is that in terms of the progress that the department was expected to make in addressing AG findings, we can safely say they've made negligible progress. So we are at a very high risk of the department having a repeat of the qualification unless something drastic, I don't know what it would be, because up to the end of quarter four, I'll show just now the results, very little progress was made in addressing the findings. Not that to say there was no attempts, but I think what we focus on is the impact and the resultant outcome. And at that level, we have not been able to hit the mark that we would have loved to see. And if I go through the details of what the department put together, these next few slides are basically what the department themselves put together, having been issued with a management letter. And this is what they've put together to say, these are the findings, these are the areas where the findings are. And our focus in the main on this one will be on that green column showing how much in each area was implemented and how much of the findings or action plans out of the findings were not implemented. And just very quickly, in the governance space, I can say 5 of the 7 were not implemented. In the tangible capital, I mean, in the tangible assets space, you can see there in the main, I'll touch on the big ones, under logistics, 11 findings or 11 action plans were not implemented out of the 16. Under the intangible assets, all 3 action plans were not implemented as a quarter four. If you look at the predetermined objectives, mainly around the chief of staff area, there was 10 action plans which management had identified, but all of them were not implemented. Under compensation of employees in the HR space, there was 24 action plans which were not implemented out of the 25. Within goods and services area, there was in the main finance that you'll see coming out with 6 not implemented action plans out of the 8. If we go to service delivery issues, logistics is the main one there with 14 items not implemented out of the 17. Within revenue receivables and contingent liability areas, finance is a big one there with 24 of the action plans that we agreed upon not being implemented, and followed by the army there where all the action plans, 7 of them were not implemented as at quarter four. Within the IT side, there was 12 action plans which were implemented out of the 15, followed there by logistics, 8 of the 9 not implemented. And the picture we're trying to paint here, which management basically has put before us, and we're simply reflecting back to the committee what the status is that there's a huge number of action plans derived from findings, which remain pending. And you'll see, I'm almost on the last slide of that, within the procurement space, there's basically, I think this is probably the leading area which most of the findings and most of the action plans, logistics, where there's 64 of the action plans which remained not implemented, and there's 2 where there was maybe difference of opinion, where there was a disagreement. You'll see them reflect on the extreme right there. And going to the last slide, Chair, within the special defense side of things, basically, there was in total there's about 5 action plans which were not even 5, about 12 of them remained not implemented out of the 14 that we agreed upon to be implemented. And in total, right at the bottom there, you'll see just the total action plans that the department had implemented is 24 out of the 219, which equates to 11%. And therefore, 89% of our action plans remained outstanding as at quarter four. It is a disappointing outcome. And I think through the quarterly monitoring that we provide as an audit committee, we really had hoped that management would have done everything possible to make sure that what we see is basically the opposite. Would have loved to see 89% implemented. But unfortunately, whatever efforts we put in, this is the result we have. And hence our earlier comment and concern that it may be that we may have a 4th time around repeat of a qualification there. In terms of the challenges, Chair, and the concerns, which also we've raised this with management and also with the ministry, our assessment basically is that with all the efforts of holding people to account, whether from investigations or from findings in terms of who must implement what and who has not implemented what, our assessment is that that system which is at play is clearly not effective. So the system of accountability in the department we viewed as not effective. and especially Chair, in the area of services and divisions. Because if you look at the logistics area, which is where basically bulk of the procurement takes place in that space, there is a need to make sure that whenever there is irregular expenditure that's been detected, that there's immediate response and accountability of all members within that space to make sure that they respond appropriately and improve the control environment. And when needs be, people are being disciplined. So that system of accountability is seriously not giving the desired result. Also, Chair, there is a charge by PFMA upon management, and it stipulates the accounting officer, but we would like to see management taking the full ownership of this responsibility, which is to design, implement, and actually ensure that our system of controls are actually as effective at all times, and that there's also compliance right across with all relevant statutes. Our reading is that there seems to be non-appreciation or not understanding the gravity or the significance of complying with that qualification to PFMA statutes. And I think through this session, we've seen, Chair, how there's always a consideration of what the defense mandate says. There's a PFMA, and this is something that I think we will put forward to this committee and say it's also one of the biggest contributors. You've seen the finance slide, I put this there quite strongly. So, Chair, there's poor appreciation basically as to what are the PFMA requirements and how onerous are these, and what must be done to make sure that there's full compliance with these at all times. That is not at the level where it should be, and I think more work needs to be done to make sure that PFMA is maybe canvassed across all our services and divisions, that people take a full responsibility and to comply with the PFMA. Also, Chair, we'll see that performance generally in the department has been a challenge, especially in the 2021-22 year. It's actually not at a target that one would have loved to see. And also, what we've seen, Chair, is that irregular expenditure is on an incline. It's continuing to increase. Of course, there's a big contributor to that, which is the shortfall on COE. But outside of the COE issue, there's also a trickling northwards as far as irregular expenditure is concerned, and this is a concern, and mainly because the PFMA charges management to actually prevent irregular expenditure. So it should not even happen, and that's the premise one moves from. Should it happen, there should be very responsive, urgent measures to investigate. Once it's determined that it is irregular, and necessary measures, especially consequence management, must be seen to be ensuing. And that is where we are concerned that if we don't arrest this at preventing it, we are concerned with how slow you'll see, as I focus on the next slide, on the SM concerns, how slow our investigation process is. If we just venture into the SCM challenges and the concerns that we've seen, of course, it is at the current moment, SCM within defense continues to reside within the CLOB. And you'll see AGS said this, I think, maybe 2 years ago in the main, in their report, that in terms of standards, in terms of what's expected, normally procurement or SCM will reside within finance. But I think there's defense review papers that have come, especially the 2015 one, where we currently see this located within CLOG. And there's the reasons behind that which can be debated. But what we'd like to hone in, Chair, is once you look at the SCM as it stands, we've got the highest number of findings within that SCM space. And both AG and Internal Audit have raised findings within that space. And what we're seeing is that the response or the redress or the resolution of those findings is the slowest. It is concerning, you will see there. And in particular, Internal Audit and the SM compliance unit actually have zoomed in to see how they can assist our logistics unit in terms of conducting its procurement. And they've visited some of the procurement centers, and some of the findings that they bring back, Chair, what the findings show is that there are procurement units across the country within the department that are continuing to procure, that they don't have the basic SCM training. Some of them are operating without the necessary bid committees. Some of them don't have the necessary tool of trade, and some continue to operate without proper delegation or sufficient number of personnel for them to have proper segregation of duties. And there are some of the concerns where where until these are put in place, we put strongly that they should therefore not be allowed to procure. We've got to fix it so that they are well enabled and given the capacity. Otherwise, we are actually producing irregular expenditure environment, and that's what is a concern. Also, Chair, what we've seen is that the department has an escalating or maybe a big register of deviations. Normally, you'd see this, it should be an exception that we procure via deviations, but in the department, that list is a bit long and it is a concern, and we've brought this to the department that would like to see this deviation usage being an exception, and it seems to be an area that it needs some attention as well, because there's onerous requirements before we can deviate. And if you are in the space of incurring deviations as a norm, you most likely will trip or not comply with all the requirements, and therefore we are actually feeding into the regular expenditure space as well. And lastly, Chair, in that space, is that we've had concern that when there's irregular expenditure that's been incurred, it actually gets almost like a channel back to the same services and divisions heads and board of inquiries that have been responsible for incurring or that have failed to prevent irregular expenditure. And this creates a bit of a conflict because, in effect, they would be investigating their own colleagues. And I think this is one area that would need to deal with in order to see expediency and consequence management within the department. And Chair, also, what we've seen is that the pace of investigations which happen within the department and the clearing of irregular or even fruitless expenditure and even implementing consequence management is painfully slow. And visually, our reading of it is that it is virtually ineffective. So something drastic needs to be done to relook and review how this whole process is handled. Otherwise, in the current form, it is virtually ineffective as far as we can read. Also, Chair, the issue of exposure on the contingent liability side, it is growing and it is a concern because it could, if any of those claimants were to win against the department, it could create a serious financial obligations and exposure to the department for funds which are not available. And Chair, also, on the ICT side, I would like to say you'll continue to hear this in presentations where it's tabled. But on the ICT side, there's a big need to actually conduct an ICT refresh on our infrastructure. And this would actually ensure that we are safely guarded from an ICT security or cybersecurity threats. But also, we live in a 4IR world. So there is a need for the department to see how we engage, how we respond, how we continue to offer our mandate within that space. And with the obsolete or old infrastructure, the exposure is very high from security, as far as security is concerned. In conclusion, Chair, what we'd like to see is that we're promoting a greater cooperation and participation, especially in the audit committee, Chair, by all services and divisions. This has been almost a cry we put forward from the very onset that we don't only want to see SECDEF sitting in our committees, but would appreciate seeing the heads of services and divisions. We've made, I think in the past committee that we set, some few improvements there, but it's still a long way to go. I can safely say we're still seeing failure by heads of services and divisions making themselves available to come to the audit committee, to engage, to be part of the deliberations, and to be able to get the benefit as they go back of how concerned we are and how they need to take ownership of the issues. And lastly, Chair, what is also clear to us is that there are very clear demands that the PFMA makes within the public sector. And at the same time, within the department, there's dictates by the Defense Act. And as far as discipline and consequence management, clearly there is a split in the department in terms of uniformed and ununiformed members, purely from a consequence and discipline management. And I think what this has done, Chair, it's created almost two centers of power around SECDEF and the chief. And you'll see everyone, I think, is aware of the complications there. And until, Chair, this is properly addressed, we think it will continue to hinder or hamper the department from really achieving clean governance and full accountability. And it's something that I think it requires some attention. Chair, I'll leave it there. And thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Colleagues, thank you very much, Mr. Mangu. Mangu, the chairman of the audit committee. Colleagues, I'm lost for words, so that is yours. Yes, I can see your hands. Can I see the hands? Please shout. Can you shout, please, if you want to make a contribution? Can you shout, colleagues, if you want to make it, please? Can I see? Yes, I can see you, Mr. Mara. Any other hand?
Put me in, sir.
Yeah, thank you so much. Any other hand? Okay, I only have two hands so far. All right. Mr. Mara?
Chairperson, my question will be very simple. I think both of these presentations are riddled with the same problems, and that's accountability and respect to the rule of law, the requirements of the PFMA, and it is clear that the main culprits are the same people from this morning. That is in charge of Operation Tusano, and that is giving the Auditor General such a hard time. So my suggestion is that there are so many questions to be asked and there is so little time that my suggestion would be that the Secretary of Defense must give us a proper briefing on all these allegations, because it's leveled against her as the accounting officer in terms of poor control and management, and then also, you know, all the divisions, but mainly C-Lock, who has been the main culprit. So without going into all these detailed questions, both these presentations are, as you've said, one is looking for words to express frustration, disappointment, you know, all these kind of nice English words that one can use. But my request would be to order order if necessary, the SecDef and the minister to come and explain to us what is going on, why is it still going on. It is continuous, and whether there's just not an ability to adhere to these requirements. Do they understand it? Don't come with budget all the time. I mean, these are principles of governance that is not adhered to. And people that are seeing themselves clearly above the laws of South Africa, and they want to do as they wish to do, and we must just let them go. And that's not acceptable. We cannot afford this, not South Africa, not the Defence Force, not us as members of parliament. So that would be my suggestion to you, Chair, is to please arrange for the SecDef and the minister, and even if it's necessary, the chief of the SNDF, to please come and address us on all these matters that both of these presentations are highlighting on a regular basis. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Mare has summed up actually for me. The reality is that we have been at loggerheads with ourselves wanting to find what the reasons are. And today's presentation, in particular from AXA and the committee, the external committee, audit committee, is quite insightful, and it gives us the leverage to zoom into those areas where we have to table them one by one, where we engage the Secretary of Defense and his peers and her peers. So it is one of the milestones that today we have achieved much because of the reports that we have just received, and they give us more teeth to engage from the minister. Luckily, the deputy minister is also here. He has heard it all.
So it needs us to go back to where we have to zoom into the space and engage decisively, because this thing, we have been dealing with this thing for quite a while. And even the previous presentation, it talked about the things that we discussed. But now, luckily, this time around with the internal committee, audit committee, it gives us more clarity on how to deal with this matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, just from myself, this is what the executive said in February 2021. The presentation was made by Mr. Obonsi. I'm saying executive because of the accounting officer. I think Mr. Ebonsi said they are searching for, okay, he said they are implementing consequence management and removing serial offenders from procurement post. We are searching for an automated procurement process with an integrated procurement system that is aligned to the planning and reporting instruments. He continues, services and divisions have submitted action plans detailing how they plan to manage the control weaknesses, which results in audit findings. He says, at the monthly accountability management committee meetings attended by all chiefs of services and divisions chaired by the executive, services and divisions give feedback on their status of addressing prior year findings. And they went on to say, we now have a fully constituted audit committee. Attendance to the committee will be at the level of a chief of services. That's what was mentioned in February 2021. In March this year, this is what the department said on the implementation of the 20, the March, the last year, the February 2021, we're dealing with the audit action plan in relation to 2020-2021 financial year. Now, in March this year, we're dealing with the implementation of the audit action plan in relation to 2021. No, that was 1920, and this is 2021. This is what the department said. The department develops action plan for each finding issued to resolve and manage the control weaknesses which results in the findings being issued or raised. These action plans are then consolidated by the finance division and presented at monthly accountability management committee meetings for monitoring and monthly feedback from the chiefs of services and divisions. The meetings are chaired by the SECDEF and attended by all the chiefs of services and divisions. We get the same information every day, but there are no results. I'm saying the information that has just been presented by the audit committee proves that there is very little that has been achieved since these undertakings were made by the department, by the sector, I'll say the sector, because he's the accounting officer for the department. All right. So we're moving in circles. There's a proposal, a very firm proposal from Mr. Murray, that perhaps we need to have a meeting with SECDEF, the chief of the SNDF and the minister present and discuss these matters. Just these three, and not maybe this, and include the CFO. SNDF, chief of the SNDF, the minister, sorry, okay, now minister, deputy minister, SNDF, the chief of the SNDF, and the CFO to discuss these issues. That's the firm proposal, and not because, I mean, with the team that has been presenting so far, we seem to be, you know, moving in circles. I mean, the findings of the audit commission are damning. All right. So maybe let's leave.
It's embarrassing, Chair. It's embarrassing to us as well. Really, it's embarrassing. Yeah.
Maybe let's conclude on the meeting. Let's leave it at that. And because we can't, I don't think there's anything that the department will have to respond to on this. DM, your concluding remarks, and we are looking forward to this meeting where Minister yourself, SECDEF, Chief of the SNDF, and SECDEF will then meet. If it means we must all be in the same under the same roof, so be it. Let it be, Deputy Minister.
Honorable Chair, let me first thank the Chair of the Audit Committee, Mr. Manuku, for the report he has shared with the committee.
Please set your video on me, DM, my apologies.
I was saying, Chair, let me thank the Chair of the Audit Committee, Mr. Manuku, for the report he has shared with the members of the committee. What I can say, Chair, is that what gives me satisfaction is that at least in this particular instance, with respect to the departments under our ministry, we do have a mechanism that is giving us sight of the challenges we have. And the Audit Committee of the DOD has done well. as you would know that in the other department, the problem is that we don't even have this visibility. We're not getting the kind of advices we are getting from the Audit Committee that has just reported. I agree, Chair, that we should proceed to arrange for a meeting that will follow up on this almost non-performance, which is suggested by the report of the Audit Committee. I almost fooled myself that I was out of the loop when you first mentioned the people who must be in that meeting, but I see now you've included me too. I think it is the right way to go. When you look at the audit action plan, according to the Audit Committee, what has been implemented and what has not been implemented, it does unavoidably lead us to a conclusion that we are indeed moving around in circles or we're not making much progress. So that the committee suggests we meet, I will report this to the minister that we prepare for that meeting. Chair, I wanted before we part to just say in relation to the presentation we entertained before on the Ops Tusano, that agree with the suggestion made there again, that we should come back to bring this matter to finality. I am concerned personally, honorable members, that we are dragging the discussions around Ops Tusano longer than we should. In our next engagement on Tusano, I think we should agree on the extension of Tusan that is suggested, and what should be the conditions for the extension of Ops Tusan. I am raising this because, you see, the extension of Ops Tusano must entail the correction of what the Auditor General has said, to the effect that all procurement under Ops Tusano was irregular procurement. And the reasons are are very obvious, as we know, that that procurement has happened, as far as the AG is concerned, outside of the prescripts of the PFMA. Now, a point has been raised, of course, correctly so, by the observation made by Honorable Member Muke, whether the Department of Defense should be accorded a different procurement procedure. That is, I think, a pointed question that he has raised. And I've noted what the generals had to say in relation to that. As a matter of policy, I believe that the committee chair must look at the history of the South African state with respect to these matters, because that kind of exclusive privilege of procurement would not be happening for the first time. The South African state has the history of, in the past, under the old order, of procurement that involved a whole host of projects that were COVID projects. And it is many years after those projects had come to light as to what was involved that it left the whole country very unhappy. So, yes, there may be a need for such a submission to be made, but before we make that submission, we must satisfy ourselves that we want to go back to that practice. And especially the South African Defense Establishment, because part of those COVID projects were sitting within the Defense Establishment. So it's a matter which policy makers, lawmakers, members of parliament on these committees of defense that must come in and assist us there. There is also the point, of course, that the determination, as you have correctly said, Honorable Chair, of the value for money of what was spent on Ops Tusano or in Ops Tusano is the responsibility of the auditors. It is the auditors who will tell us whether every cent that was spent there, whatever judgment we use, whatever comparisons we make, but if there was value for money for what we have spent the money on as far as Tusano is concerned. There is, I think, a point which we must lay to rest, which is that the suggestion that the procurement was under the state of national disaster has been laid to rest at that point, as far as the account of the minister to parliament is concerned. And I don't think it will change anything. The forte of the South African National Defence Force with respect to matters national responsibility are concerned, that forte is provided for in the constitution. And the constitution talks about the state of national defense, not national disaster. And the declaration of state of national disaster specified and it articulated what is it that needed to be done by who and how. It is clear that the Ops Tusano does not fall within the provisions of the national state of disaster. We should not, in my view, punish ourselves by keeping on coming back to this issue as if there is no official view or account by the ministry with respect to Ops Tusano and the state of national disaster. Those are the issues that I thought we should, as we part, speak to. I do want to say that the Secretary of Defense is a very important office. It's very important office. And it may well be that the ministry has to, also assist the office of the, Secretary for Defense in relation to the two matters for us to, effectively deal with some of the challenges that were observed in today's meeting. With that said, Chair, what I'm saying is that the proposals with respect to the two items that served on how we must deal with them going forward is supported. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, DM. But the issues, DM, that should not wait for the meeting. One, the audit committee is only three members are remaining now, out of six who should be in the committee. I know that the sector has reported on the matter that there are measures underway to fill the vacancies. If that this should be speeded up, I'm raising this point because it was spoken, it was touched on even in 2021 February, but we still do not have a fully capacitated internal audit committee. And that two, the position of audit, what chief audit executive be expedited. This post remained vacant, I think, for years now. When we, in 2019, we were told that processes were underway to fill this position. It remains vacant 2 or 3 years later, at least from the time we started as this committee. And then thirdly, the capacitation of the internal audit division. Already they are saying there are things that they are unable to do, that they are lagging behind on, that they cannot do because of capacity challenges. Within the unit. So we wish that be attended to urgently. It means I'm talking about the filling of critical vacancies within the internal audit. Unit or division. So we said we're not going to discuss this matter any further than this, because I think it requires that meeting with the three plus the with the three senior officials in the department and the minister and the deputy minister. To see if we cannot find a solution to this. I mean, it's clear that the department is not responding to treatment. We've been hoping that at some point there will be some changes, there will be some improvement. And, you know, but it's clear. In fact, we're getting worse. We've moved from six audit findings to two audit findings in 2019-2020, to four audit findings in 2021, and we're now waiting for another qualification with the number of audit findings. So we want to close the issue on that for now. Let me thank you, DM and the team. Thank you, Internal Audit Committee. We would invite you to the meeting that we are scheduling with the Minister and the Deputy Minister and the three senior officials of government, because we'll be... Your presentation will be the basis for our discussion. In other words, your internal audit division and your internal audit committee report. So we wish to close the meeting on that note. It went way beyond time, over time. Brian, we're not going to consider the other issues. SecDef, thank you very much. AG, thank you very much. Colleagues, can we do object if we end the meeting now?
No, sir.
Thank you.
We may, Chair.
All right. Colleagues, thank you very much, and the meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Long live the Chair.